Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Tuesday edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. It's a little more than a minute past the hour. And you know what? I was sitting around doing prep for the show. I do that on days when we have a show. And something occurred to me. I hate August. This is the 31st day of August, and I am glad to see August gone. August has probably been a pain in the ass month ever since the Romans changed the name of August from Sextilis to August, you know, to honor Octavian, Julius Caesar's great-nephew or whatever, who was his adopted heir, or at least that's what Octavian said. In the old Roman calendar, the first month of the year was March, named for Mars, the god of war. Then May, and then Junius, then Quintilis, and then Sextilis. Sextilis was the sixth month. March, April, May, June, July. Yep, Sextilis. And August has sucked, well, and it certainly stinks now. You know, T.S. Eliot wrote that April is the cruelest month. A psychologist or a psychotherapist will tell you that February is a very tough month. There's a lot of suicides in February. If you don't happen to be a follower of the some variety of Christian dogma, December's pretty tough, too. And if you're not attached to someone, you know, if you don't have a lot of family around, you feel like you're sort of out in the cold, literally. Because, well, but you know what? The only place where resides those Currier and Ives sort of, you know, warm family get, that doesn't happen. That's only on TV. So December's kind of rough, too. But August bites. You know why? Because the right wing is so far out ahead of us in terms of messaging and in terms of getting stuff done that they stole August right out from under our noses. You know, our side, Democrats and whatnot. And, oh, look, it's August. We get a break. Let's go home. The Republicans looked at August and said, August, look at this. There's nothing going on. We can own this month. Every August of every year, we can reshape the political dialogue. We can torment America with our talking points. Last year, it was the rise of the teabaggers, and it was venomous, hate-filled, cranky white people with nothing better to do taking guns to town hall meetings. We're exercising the First Amendment this time. Next time, we're going to exercise our Second Amendment. See me pulling at my galluses here. Snap. You know, over the last several years, it's gotten to where I kind of dread the holiday season because I know I'm going to have to start listening to those prattling idiots over at Radio Rwanda talking about the war on Christmas. They've gotten to where they start the war on Christmas business in Quintilis. That would be July. But add August to the list. From the rise of the teabaggers and their gun-toting freakishness, to this August that we have spent talking about nothing except the not a mosque, not a controversy. And now, you know, look what I did last night. I'm going to do some of it again tonight, and I make no apologies for it. Glenn Beck hijacked August as well. Jesus, I remember when I was a little kid, and August meant that Dad's vacation would come, and since we were hillbillies, although we didn't say that word in the house, I wear it now proudly as a badge of honor. But we were West Virginia people, so when all my other little friends and classmates were going down to the Gulf of Mexico to play in the sand, maybe go to Gulf Shores or Dolphin Island, or you know, some if the families had the money to go a little further, they might go on down to Fort Walton or Panama City. And the Miracle Mile. Miracle Strip, I forget what. Miracle Strip, I think. We turned around and headed for the hills. We left the August heat of Alabama and exchanged it for the sweltering August heat of West Virginia. At least we had air conditioning in Alabama. Coming up here, not so much. No air conditioning. No air conditioning in this house, and no air conditioning at my other grandmother's house. My father had become accustomed to air conditioning, and he would... I remember this as if it was yesterday, especially in the... You know, there's a sort of slanting quality to the golden light of August, and it is beautiful. The earth, ever so imperceptibly, has begun to shift, and the sun is a little bit more south of west. And you know that autumn is not that far away. Gardens begin to fade toward a sort of brushy ending. The corn is in. The tomatoes have pretty much played out. The cucumbers are done. Jesus, I sound like Garrison Keillor. But it was on one of those August expeditions up here when my father, completely burned out by the incessant and relentless heat from which there was no surcease, my father pulled into the driveway and said, "Come on, son." And I got to admit, this was not the most exciting place in the world for a boy who knew that his pals were down cavorting in the surf along the Gulf Coast. So I jumped in the car with Dad, and we drove up. And where are we going, Daddy? Beer joint. Now, before you start cussing my dad for taking a little boy to a beer joint, understand, it exists to this day. It's not a beer joint anymore, but I've shown my kids the building. It was a little cinder block, and the cinder blocks were painted building with signs for Stroh's and Augustiner. Hanging outside, neon lights saying open. Screen door and a door behind that. But what drew my dad into the beer joint was not those Stroh's signs, or he was powerful fond of Augustiner. And he liked his West Virginia brand Pilsner. Brought to you by the Fasenmeyer Brewing Company, Huntington, West Virginia, I do believe. They don't make it anymore. What drew my dad to that beer joint, much to the shocked dismay of the good Baptists and Methodists on both sides of the family? Where did he take that boy? Did he take him up there? Well, he did. And we walked in that. We drove up. It was a 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan. Turquoise in color. Big old 383 four-barrel carb in it. Just the last vestiges of fins to be seen in the tail section. It's a beautiful car. And we drove up the road maybe 3 miles. And we pulled in at that beer joint with the flashing open sign and the Stroh's signs and the Augustiner signs and so forth. But what drew my dad was the other thing you could see from the road. And that was a window unit air conditioner sticking out of the double-hung window that had been placed there in the midst of the cinder block storefront. And for a little boy, I couldn't have been any more than 8 or 9. Walking in there, it was like being initiated into the Eleusinian Mysteries or the Mithras cult. It was dark. And, oh, Jesus, it was cold. It was cold. Dad sat down at the bar and ordered himself an Augustiner. And they brought it to him with a glass. And they brought me a Frosty root beer, Frosty brand root beer. And both of those bottles had an instantaneous gathering of ice-cold condensation on the outside when they were brought out of that slide-top cooler. And for all intents and purposes, Dad was paying rent on the air conditioning by buying those two beers he drank that day. And I for my two root beers. August is hot. There's not many places on the North American continent where August is not hot. Humid and sticky. A time for getting away. You can't even think in this kind of heat. But it's been taken from us, that respite, that relaxation, that little bit of freedom, that little bit of... First of all, most American workers don't get the kind of vacation time that my father got back then. What? We're going to pay our workers to not work and just tell them they can go home for a couple of weeks? Because for as long as they lived, and they adored Alabama, as I did, and do... Those 2 weeks would come around, and it was always referred to the same way. We're going home for a couple of weeks. We're going home. And thus it always is with hillbillies who are outcast in a flatter world. We're going home for a little bit. And my mother singing the state anthem as we crossed the Big Sandy River from Kentucky into West Virginia. On I-64. Oh, the hills, the beautiful hills, how I love the West Virginia hills. Whether over land or sea I roam, still I think of happy home. And my home amongst those West Virginia hills. I can hear her voice, the same as I can hear my father's. In those long gone days of August. But fond memories are about all I have of August anymore. Because the godforsaken, motherless, soulless, remorseless, merciless, relentless tide of the right wing that is hell-bent on destroying this nation has ruined August. Just like they ruined Christmas. Just like they ruin everything to which they set their hands, whether it be a nation itself, economic policy, the middle class, the right to work in safety and security, and with a sense of peace and dignity, everything that they have set their hands to, they have ruined. And August Sextilis is now on the list. And it angers me. Not one moment's peace will these remorseless bastards give us until we knuckle under and put on the burlap sacks and revert to the natural the vassal state to which they aspire or despire, whatever, us. I resent it. I resent that gargantuan exercise in ego and the soft-pedaled religion that went down on Saturday. I resent the teabaggers. I resent the ignorance, the manifest ignorance that lies undergirds all of these misanthropic, misbegotten, satanic efforts by the right wing to destroy the last vestiges of what is good and decent in this country. I resent it. And so I am glad to say goodbye to August. On the other hand, I wish we had a couple of more days of August left. We might actually reach our fundraising goal for the month. We're about $700 away from the $2,500 goal. And that's likely how it's going to end, or near to it. But that's okay. We'll hopefully find a way to keep it going another month, another month, another month. That's the way we've been going. That's the way we have to go. Because, you know, Goldline is not out there sponsoring us. Speaking of Goldline, the prime sponsor of the Rodeo Clown, coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to have a fascinating conversation, I think. I think you're really going to enjoy it. We're going to be joined by Angelo Carasone. I hope I'm saying that right. We'll find out in good time. I don't know if you pronounce the E or not. He's on the verge of graduating law school up at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Great place to go to law school. Great place to go in general. And we're going to have this conversation because I want you to be able to hear from someone who didn't ask permission, who didn't seek the broader support, who simply saw a job that had to be done and did it, and has done it magnificently and is going to continue doing it. Angelo, you see, is the brain, the motivation, the origin of a website called StopBeck.com. StopBeck.com. Other people and other organizations have tried to take a bite out of Beck. But I would say that Angelo has done as much or more than anyone else out there. This is what he did. He's got an apartment there in Madison where he goes to law school. And he takes one for the team every day. He literally watches 1 hour of Beck and listens to 3 hours of his radio show. And creates transcripts, and pays close attention to the advertisers in all the programs, and then begins to pressure the advertisers. And he has had significant success. He's had some setbacks, but he's had a lot of success. Among other things, one of the most noteworthy ones, Kraft Foods, who, having been let know some of the filth that spills out of the garbage gob of Glenn Beck on any given day, pulled out. Others, not so much. You know, there's a there's an outfit out there called Serve Pro. The Serve Pro goes around and repairs fire and water damage. They are also owned, if you didn't know this, by one of the usual suspects, a right-wing fundamentalist evangelical ideologue. But at StopBeck.com, they don't take no for an answer, and they continue the pressure. So we'll be talking with Angelo here in about 10, 15 minutes or so. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. There's a lot of different places that I hope we can take the conversation. Something I didn't mention during yesterday's show. We did have an election here in West Virginia on Saturday, the 28th. And, in fact, Ken Heckler, my candidate, did not win. But it is not for want of having tried. And it is not for want of a great deal of dedication on the part of people who tried to further his campaign. No-show Joe Manchin, who was afraid to debate, whose administration is presently under investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office for corruption, he won the Democratic primary, setting up a showdown, a three-way showdown in November 2nd, between Joe and a mining monster named John Racy and Jesse Johnson, the Mountain Party candidate. Now, for those of you who call in and say, Bob, why don't you vote green? Bob, why don't you... Blah, blah, blah. Well, Bob's a goner. And I'm encouraging everyone I know in the state of West Virginia to vote for Jesse Johnson and the Mountain Party. One of these days, I hope the Mountain Party will figure out that it needs to be running candidates for state senate, house of delegates, county commission, county surveyor, dog catcher, mayor, things like that, if they really want to build a party. But I am going to be voting for Jesse Johnson for senate. And that is my own personal sentiment and not that of any organization, just me. I'm going to be voting for Jesse Johnson on November the 2nd. And if as a result of a whole bunch of us voting for Jesse Johnson, Joe Manchin winds up losing to the mining monster John Racy, you know what? I'm at a point where I'm not going to apologize for it. I am damn sure not going to apologize for not voting for a man who has actively worked against the health and well-being of myself and my loved ones, my family, my friends, my neighbors, my colleagues, and everyone that I care about. I'm not going to apologize for not voting for a man who sits idly by while generation after coming generation in West Virginia are poisoned genetic trickery of heavy metals are injected into those future generations' makeup before they even become zygotes. And you know what? The net effect, as far if you care about climate change, if the environmental issues are important to you, the net effect of either Joe Manchin or John Racy going to the United States Senate for West Virginia, there's no difference between the two. Now, you would get a difference in that, you know, John Racy says he's going to go to Washington to stand up to that Negro Obama. Probably a Muslim born in Kenya. Oh, yeah, the ads are absolutely sickening. But you know what? I'm not going to apologize when the Senate gets screwed by virtue of just, because remember, in 2000, everybody, oh, Florida, 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 Al Gore, Al Gore, Al Gore, you know, Florida, Florida, Florida. Recount, recount, recount. Nader, 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 Nader. Shh. If West Virginia had done the right thing and voted for Al Gore, Florida wouldn't have mattered. Those five little pissant electoral votes coming out of West Virginia would have made the difference, but the hillbillies screwed themselves and screwed America. We're getting ready to do it again. Because you know what? America's screwing West Virginia. America hasn't stood up and demanded an end to mountaintop removal. America is okay with 6.5 million pounds of toxic high explosives going off in Appalachia every blessed day. what apology do I owe for refusing to vote for a mugwump, refusing to vote for a non-Democrat, a Democrat in name only, for refusing to vote for a Manchin, and a Manchin has never voted for another Democrat whose name wasn't Manchin? What apology do I owe? The short answer is none. None. So I just wanted to, and we can discuss that if you want to. We'll be back with this evening's conversation in just a matter of a couple of minutes. We're going to take a little break. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. During the interim, go have a look at StopBeck.com and look at what one dedicated person can do with a little bit of passion, a little bit of drive, and a whole lot of determination. Go have a look. We'll be back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
You've been running, you've been hiding, you've been trying to walk a crooked line. Hey, you've been running, you've been hiding, you've been trying to walk a crooked line. Hey, you've been looking over your shoulder for a long, long time. Yeah, looking in your eyes, I can tell you ain't sleeping at night. Looking in your eyes, I can tell you ain't sleeping at night. Sooner or later, you're gonna have to make things right. Living a little lie, you can't outrun them. Living a little lie, just wear you down. You're never gonna die, just keep on coming. I'm gonna come around, make someone cry. Oh, live a little lie.
God, that is one of my favorite albums, Kevin Welch. beneath my wheels. And that lyric packs a wallop too, doesn't it? Without a doubt. This is, of course, The Horn. It is Tuesday. I'm Bob, and as promised, we've got a conversation ready to fire up for you right now. On the line with me is Angelo Carasone, calling from Wisconsin, and we're going to talk a little bit about the origins of Stop Beck and how the ultimate goal can finally be accomplished. Angelo, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking time to talk with me.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Bob.
It's a real pleasure. So did I understand in the email correctly that you're about to be an ex-law student?
I am about to be an ex-law student, yes, sometime this week.
So are you all up to speed on the rule against perpetuities and mort main and all of that fun stuff?
Yes, I'm up to speed on it. I like to forget it as quickly as possible.
Don't worry, you will. if you go into practice, you will never see a rule against perpetuities case if you practice for the next 100 years. But you better know it right now. let's talk a little bit about StopBeck.com. This is your brainchild, and this is something that came along and sort of, I don't know, reading things, it looks like it just sort of exploded inside your skull along about, what, summer of 2009?
That's right, yeah, July 2nd, 2009 would be the official start date.
And what happened on July the 2nd, 2009?
Well, it actually happened a little bit before that. You know, I had been watching that all the time, not the way I follow it now, but I'd seen, you know, Daily Show clips, and every once in a while, flipping through Fox, I'd, you know, watch this crazy person on Fox News, and he was always spewing the most ridiculous nonsense. But there was a point in June when Glenn Beck had a guest on, Michael Schur, and he agreed with Michael Schur that the best way for them to achieve their political objectives would be to basically exploit the next terrorist attack on the United States, which they saw as a foregone conclusion, and they also, for some reason, envisioned it in the form of a bomb. So, you know, they felt that that would be the prime opportunity to strike. And, you know, given Glenn Beck's past and everything I've seen of him so far, something about that comment just seemed far over the line. And it sort of got me interested in, you know, sort of right-wing deceit and Glenn Beck specifically. And I thought, you know, there comes a point when you have to sort of draw a line. There's got to be some degree of accountability for our broadcasters. I mean, they're all leading voices, after all. They should be held responsible for their ridiculous statements. It would happen on the left. It would happen to anybody, I assume, in public life. So I didn't understand why somebody in Glenn Beck's position would be insulated from any accountability. So that's what started it, and here we are.
And now, I'm sure that once you started contacting the advertisers and so forth, somewhere along the way, some little knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing right-wing moron said something like, "You're trying to take away his First Amendment rights." As someone who has suffered the three long, miserable years of law school, does that just make you want to tear your hair out and run around the room? Because you're not violating anybody's First Amendment rights, are you?
Not even in the slightest bit, and it does drive me crazy because, you know, these people who tend to make those charges actually hold themselves up in high esteem as the protectors and ultimate defenders of the Constitution, and the deepest irony there is not only are they, you know, completely and totally misrepresenting what the Constitution stands for, but they're actually espousing an ideology that is viciously anti-free market, which is something they also espouse, which is, you know, consumer choices and consumer rights, and, you know, the idea that we should not be allowed to, you know, not purchase from a company that sponsors someone, or alternatively, and more importantly, that a company should be forced to sponsor a show in which they don't want to pay money for or associate their brand with is an absurd notion that they seem to believe is a violation of someone's free speech rights. And I just wonder where my sponsors are.
Yeah, no kidding. We wonder that every day here, Angelo. But the fact of the matter is that he started out with some corporate sponsors, and now he doesn't have so much, right?
Well, that's right. He's pretty much, I mean, with respect to his UK show, which the Fox News is broadcast in the UK, embarrassingly enough, but it is broadcast over there, and his UK show has run without any commercials for 6 months. They've had zero advertisements. So when Rupert Murdoch espouses the false notion that this advertiser boycott has had zero effect on their bottom line, I mean, that's just a demonstrably false claim. But beyond that, at home, I mean, he's basically down to nothing. All he has left are right-wing think tanks. You know, he has a lot of, you know, let's, you know, renew the tax cuts and Freedom Works and, of course, his gold line scams. And that's basically what his advertisers at home have been reduced to. And, of course, you know, sometimes very small, gadgety companies. But he's got no major brands left And the ones that do pop up, their advertisements, we sort of go after them. But there's just basically nothing left.
So in other words, he's basically receiving corporate or think tank welfare. He is being subsidized by the right wing.
Well, that's true. I mean, he's not only being subsidized by the right wing because, you know, even though they advertise on his show, they don't make up for the total advertising revenue losses that are resulting here, the overall revenue. So as a matter of fact, not only is Glenn Beck receiving a form of welfare, but Rupert Murdoch is forcing the shareholders of News Corp to absorb the financial loss as a result of keeping Glenn Beck on, so that News Corp can advance a very clear political message. And it's very strange to see them turning down the opportunity to make money in order to advance a political ideology. But it just goes to underscore the fact that when Fox News portrays himself as fair and balanced, I mean, that's not true. Their obvious goal here and mission is to propagate a political ideology.
You know, and as you said, that's another instance in which he's running directly contrary to the free market, because as you're describing it, Angelo, Glenn Beck cannot survive in the free market. Let me ask you this: when we talk about Rupert Murdoch, of course, we're talking about television advertising on that network that we not so lovingly refer to here on the Horn as Radio Rwanda. But on the radio itself, his radio show is a different animal. He's syndicated, unless I'm mistaken, by someone outside of Fox. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. And I think this really gets to the heart of what is wrong with a lot of our political discourse these days. Glenn Beck is syndicated by one of the large radio conglomerates out there, Premier Radio Network.
The same people that do Randy Rhodes and Rush Limbaugh.
That's right. And but predominantly, that just sort of crowds out a lot of the local conversations and the ability to have a diverse and engaging, political dialogue. Instead, we have these monoliths sort of trying to espouse a national message that I don't really think fits in anywhere and just tends to serve themselves and, the corporate entities in which they identify with.
Well, you listen to a lot of Glenn Beck radio, and frankly, you have both my thanks and my sympathy. Fortunately, there's nobody around here who carries him, but on the occasions when I've heard the radio show, I've found myself wanting to pull off into the local parking lot of Ice Picks R Us and get one for my ears. But what kind of advertising does he have on the radio?
Well, his radio advertisements are really are very limited, and when he started losing his television advertisers, we saw an increase, not only a translation from them moving over to television, but we saw an increase in their purchases. For example, Goldline has increased their ad purchases on his television show. But with respect to his shows on his radio advertisers, it's Goldline predominantly, FreedomWorks now, which is a right-wing think tank, Dick Armey, and then of course there's his next biggest would be Carbonite, and then right after that would be Survival Seed. So when the entire world falls apart, you can construct yourself a little 5-foot by 5-foot garden of these survival seeds. Because
if this crazy little bastard wasn't so daggum dangerous, I'd sit here and laugh.
I know. Yeah.
Survival seeds? Really?
And
survival seeds?
Food insurance, which provides you, in the event of a, sort of a total, complete and total social breakdown, food insurance, this company, we're supposed to believe, they'll get Kevin Costner from the Postman and somehow deliver you a sack, a year-long supply of, freeze-dried and canned food. So when the whole world falls apart, apparently food insurance is still going to be there. So please, give them your money as quickly as possible in the event that the entire world falls apart. So that's it. That's all he's got. It's kind of a joke.
I tell you what, Angelo, I remember a long time ago, I read it over at BuzzFlash, at BartCop.com, via a guy who's been posting there, had a relationship with Bart's website, a guy named Michael Dare, and through him, I learned about something called the Time Travel Fund. And this was something that, you sent $10, and they guaranteed that they would, they would deposit $10 in a bank account in your name, so that when time travel became feasible, they would come back, regenerate you, take you back to the future, and you would be incredibly wealthy. If we're down to the point where we're getting food insurance ads on Glenn Beck and survival seeds, how much longer till he starts advertising the time travel fund?
It's pretty close. I'm expecting him to actually move into the Biostar you know, because that's much more legitimate. And, you know, and that seems much more up Glenn Beck's alley these days, since he's sort of taking on a, you know, a heavenly, celestial sort of, you know, aura about him. And I suspect at some point he'll start naming stars and offering that to his subscribers.
You know, a few years back I tried to get something started along the same lines. I thought it had real potential, but we just couldn't get it to take off. I started the International Raindrop Registry. We were going to, you know, for a small fee, you'd get a bound volume, and you would have a raindrop or snowflake in the winter named after your loved one. but these really are the kind of dodges on which right-wing radio survives. And let me, if we can go into a little bit of depth here, Angelo, I posed the question, well, I've posed it a million times. If you look at, and I realize Glenn Beck is your specialty, not anybody else, but if you look at, if you listen to the ads that are running on these radio shows, these right-wing radio shows, everybody who listens to The Horn knows that I've got a, it's a generic sort of, they all know that all these radio shows advertise are vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls and drop them on Swedish mattresses, which if you sleep on them will grow hair back and give you an erection. I mean, you know, it's all patent medicines, it's all dodges, it's all call 1-800-TAKE-MY-MONEY. How do you do all that? How do you advertise with nothing but that, Angelo, and pay somebody the kind of money that Glenn Beck gets paid, or that Hannity gets paid, or that Rush Limbaugh or Savage or any of these other weenies get paid?
Because they're fans, you know. I mean, I hate to overgeneralize, you know, but a lot of their fans are so unbearably committed to these single individuals, these sort of, you know, that there's nothing short of calling them cultists. I mean, they are genuinely deeply committed to them. They wrap themselves, you know, in their personalities, whether it be Sean Hannity or Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh. And so, you know, if I'm selling a crappy product, you know, a lighter that lights itself, you know, I can get a million of Glenn Beck's fans to buy it. So I don't mind giving Glenn Beck 40%, you know, for advertising, because the guy's going to trick a whole bunch of people into buying my crappy product. And so I don't mind paying him exorbitant rates. And that's basically what it boils down to. I mean, they're selling them these, you know, not only either politically, ideologically reinforcing products, but they're selling them crappy products, and they're just, you know, selling large amounts of them, and they don't mind sharing the wealth.
Well, you know, there's something else that plays into this as well, and Matt Osborne's pointing it out for me right now. And last night on the program, in trying to analyze Beckapalooza, White Stock, whatever you want to call it, that went down on Saturday, I did something that I haven't seen our side making the connection, and that is that the thing was a great big soft soap, soft pedal for the Mormon religion. And what Matt is pointing out to me is that many of these apocalypse preparedness outfits are Mormon owned and operated.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
Their scripture, the Book of Moron, I mean Mormon, encourages hoarding.
That's correct.
And so the food insurance and the seeds of survival. He's being subsidized by his religion then.
That's true, but what I'll add to that is, you know, it's very interesting the way, you know, I mean I listen to Glenn Beck every day. And, you know, he is a masterful manipulator. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. And what I would add is that, you know, prior to his big contract with food insurance, for example, in the preceding weeks leading up to when he first started advertising the product, he started injecting within his actual show segments where he discussed his own procedures for canning food and preserving food and how he has a cellar and how he started encouraging his fans to prepare these cellars of food and food storage. And he talked about the fact that in order to be a real man and prepare for your family, that you have to have a year's supply of food always ready to go. And then all of a sudden, you know, within a few weeks of this message being, you know, propagated by him, well, what do you know? Glenn Beck's selling a product that will take away that burden that he just told you that you needed to satisfy. And so, you know, his advertising scheme is fantastic in that it is fully integrated within his show. And I think that's why it's so compelling, and I think that's why he pushes so many products.
Well, this is fascinating because, Angelo, I sat and watched, it's actually a couple or 3 years old, but I watched a documentary on the history of Mormonism, and one of the segments, and it was run on PBS, and one of the segments in there talked about these massive, massive stockpiles of food that the LDS Church maintains.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, I'm, you know, with that comment that he made on Saturday about looking to the West, and rejecting the darkness. Of course, you know, the darkness that's in the White House. This is becoming stunning. It's becoming stunningly apparent to me that there's very definitely a proselytic underpinning to Glenn Beck. In that, if you've already got your food hoarded, well, you're one step closer to the magic underwear, aren't you?
Well, I think that what is important to recognize is that, you know, he does mainstream a lot of Mormon tenets, which would ordinarily be considered an anathema, or the Christian Americans would typically be uncomfortable with. But what he does is he presents them in the context not of religion, but either in the context of history. So, for example, when he tried to connect the Native Americans to a long-lost Jewish tribe, that is a Mormon belief, but he presented it in the context of a history lesson. And he does the same thing
with that
sort of position. Yes. He did do that, actually, live on Fox News. And, so what he does is he does present a Mormon tenet, but he does present it in the context of either politics or either in just, general, social ways of conducting yourself. He sort of eliminates the religiosity from it, at least the outward religiosity, and just focuses on the particular action itself. And, you know, when you strip away the reason why you're doing it, because some stone told you to do it and just, let's store some food. Well, that doesn't seem like so bad an idea, but for Glenn Beck, it's because some magic rock told him to do it, so it's a little different. But that's how he does it. It's very effective, and he does have a good way of mainstreaming it, and he does get a lot of money from Mormon-backed companies, of course, Mormon-backed products. And, he did the same thing when he had a sponsorship from a challenger to eat. It's a Mormon-based company. It was a startup. They had a lot of money, and they just, Glenn Beck promoted the heck out of this, basically turned it to eBay. It was a family-friendly alternative to eBay.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Right. I remember the story about the family-friendly video store in Salt Lake City, where the family-friendly Mormon proprietor had a pornographic movie studio going in the back. But never mind. This all has so much of a flavor of the, it's 2010. We are just scant months away from exactly 2 years from the date of the Mayan apocalypse. Can we expect this to just continue to ramp up on with people like Beck?
Sure. I mean, as long as there is the ability to expand, as long as there is the ability to generate profits for himself, and as long as there is the ability to, ultimately Glenn Beck makes a lot of money, but he's nothing more than a puppet, and let's be honest here, and he is. And as long as he can continue to propagate the political messages of his major funders, there will always be a Glenn Beck. And I think that's, it really gets to the heart of what's at stake here. There's a total lack of accountability in our public discourse. There's a problem with our responsibility. People don't have a sense of that any longer. These leading voices don't have a sense of that any longer. And there's no willingness to draw a line in the sand and say, this is not what we're supposed to be engaging in. When you are given a broadcast license, when you're given such a prominent role, you have certain obligations to not willfully deceive your audience in order to sell them a packet of seeds. But of course, people aren't drawing that line, and that's what the Stop Beck effort is about. And that's why, I constantly say it's a permanent effort. It's one step in the process. It's not a left-wing temper tantrum, but it's a real approach to restoring responsibility and bringing some accountability back to our airways.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you with everything that you just said, Angelo. Let me ask you this. I had a cup of coffee in law school. How do you manage 4 hours of this vitriol in conjunction with a very busy academic life and what I presume will eventually be a very busy professional life?
I think that I try, it's very easy to just say, this is about Glenn Beck. For me, if it was only about Glenn Beck, I'd feel very sad about myself. But I see this as an exercise in multiple things. Not only do I see it in the immediacy that we are actually bringing real, tangible results and accountability, but I see this as something much more important. And it's a demonstration to people that, look, if you take small, concrete actions, not only can you achieve results, because there's a feeling of intimacy on the left that I think is fueling the apathy. And I'm trying to tell people we can overcome that. That's why I constantly remind people that their tweets matter, their emails matter, their messages matter. And there's a certain degree of trust that gets built there, and people then say, okay, fine, he asked me to do it last time, a sponsor dropped, I'll do it again. And I want people to start to realize that, you know, it doesn't always have to be sign this petition and then, you know, forget about it. That we, you know, we have to start creating narratives. We have to start pushing away at things that we believe in. It's going to take a while, but we can achieve our objectives. And so when I look at it like that, I think it's important. I think it's valuable. And, you know, I started applying this model to Rush Limbaugh as well, although I don't talk about it so much because I'm waiting to announce when I have a big bump. But I already have some of Rush's advertisers already. When I get 50, I'm going to announce all 50 and then let Rush deal with those consequences. But the reality is that this model works, this approach works. I don't think it will be useful for everything. I think there are other pressure points that we can apply in this day and age. You know, we're not just hysterically boycotting companies. By and large, we don't have to boycott. Just talking about their brands and explaining to them, you know, the kinds of associations they're drawing with their companies is usually more than sufficient to have them pull their money from it. And we're just going to keep plugging away.
And the fact of the matter is it doesn't do much harm to liberal radio because they're not advertising there in the first place.
Exactly.
So when you, you know, you said it's not about signing a petition. It's not necessarily about a boycott. Would it be beneficial if there was an interlocked network, so to speak, of, you know, you doing Beck or you doing Beck and Limbaugh and somebody else does Hannity and on the radio and TV and somebody else does how difficult is this to produce? I mean, do you have a template that other people can take and use, say, if they want to, if they've got a disgusting right wing hate monger on the air in their local market that they can then use? Have you refined it that much, Angelo?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, for me, what it has been largely about, I mean, it is applicable to other units. What I think is relevant is that, you know, it's important to establish relationships with the companies first. They have to understand that this is not about politics. This transcends typical partisan bickering, and that it actually boils down to something much deeper than that, and that is that there's something really insidious going on here. They're saying some really nasty and disgusting things, and if they want their brands associated with that, then go ahead and continue, and that you will continue to associate their brand with it. And if they don't, then they have to stop and stop paying for it. And, you know, I do think that it does require a little bit of persuading to a lot of these companies who are very hesitant to wade into the political battles because of the emotions that that stirs up. But once you can demonstrate that it's not political, and as long as it's not political, but it's about something bigger than that, I think that the advertisers and the sponsors are persuadable. But like I would say, I think there are other pressure points. I mean, but one of the strange things about media conglomerates, that they're so big now that they actually create the strangest of bedfellows. And, you know, I envision this progressing into other areas where we start to create, you know, internal pressures within the companies. I mean, one of the ways in which we got some advertisers to drop, you know, an advertiser would be stubborn, but they had a, you know, one of their other subsidiaries was, you know, an organization that would want no association with Glenn Beck at all. And we went to them and said, you know, we're going to start drawing the association between you and Glenn Beck. You know, use your internal you know, influence to persuade your sister company to pull their ads. And, you know, there's a lot of room here for real progress. We just need to start identifying the pressure points and using them appropriately and drop the hysterics.
And you know what? Well, when you talk about hysterics, Angelo, the other side is very, very good at that. We had a story just last week where the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, who has boycotted Ford and Jaguar and Walt Disney, put its little fundamentalist crosshairs on Home Depot. Now, as a liberal talk radio guy, there's no love lost between me and Home Depot because I know how their owner feels about workers' rights, about stuff that matters to liberals.
Mm-hmm.
But the American Family Association, got their knickers in a bunch because they caught caught the Home Depot being a sponsor of a gay and lesbian film festival in Seattle.
Yep.
And as a consequence, they've started this nationwide boycott war against Home Depot amongst their fundamentalist followers. They have no problem. It's part of the essential hypocrisy, I think, that they have that side has no problem doing it to those that they deem to be insufficiently fundamentalist or what have you. But yet at the same time, per what I said at the beginning of our conversation, they'll scream about their First Amendment rights if we do it to them. But the fact of the matter is the right wing has been doing this kind of stuff long before you started Stop Beck, right?
That's right. Yeah, but, you know, I think the difference is that, you know, our approach is intended to produce real constructive change, long-term consequences, and it is intended to build relationships, not destroy them. You know, we're not trying to bully companies. I don't scream and yell at them, and I don't insult them. You know, I never forget, you know, some of the companies that I don't engage in what I would consider ethical practices, but, you know, I have a very clear objective in mind, is to get them to either drop Glenn Beck or Fox News as a whole. And when I'm talking to them, you know, I speak in very reasonable terms, and I explain to them the notion of branding. They spend millions of dollars to build brands. It's very easy to tear that down. It's very easy for that to be destroyed. And so instead of looking like the cross, you know, people would just run around like lunatics, I'd rather look like the more reasonable party, and I'd rather make reasonable requests such that they're so reasonable that the company simply cannot turn it down. And I think that is a much healthier approach, not only to politics, but certainly to this form of activism, and that's kind of what I want to foster. I don't want us to be, you know, this hysterical organization. I think we have to be firm, we have to have convictions, but I think that we can do it in a way that is appealing to a much broader audience. And the reality is, if there was not more of us, they wouldn't have pulled their ads. However passionate, however devoted their cultists are, the reality is they're a very, very small minority. At the end of the day, these companies are making business decisions. They're going to go with where more people are. More people have utter and complete disdain for Glenn Beck and other right-wing hatriots, and that's why these companies are not comfortable being publicly associated with them. And once we draw down the artificial barriers that they put up, they're very quick to pull their financial support from them. And that's just what I want to continue doing.
What do you do with the recalcitrant ones, the 1-800-PetMeds of the world and the Nutrisystems and the ServPros?
You know, I always keep trying. You know, I always give them a chance every, you know, so many weeks. You know, do you want to change your mind? You know, how you what are you thinking? Some of them just will not resist, you know, will not move, and, you know, they go on the permanent list. I'm in the process of updating both the remaining sponsors and the permanent list right now, but they go there, and, you know, they will be, and people just don't use them anymore. It sort of gets inbred and ingrained into the people participating in this effort, and we, you know, tweet that every so often so people know which other companies are just, that are just totally blacklisted. But the reality is there just aren't many. I mean, ServPro is one example of them. You know, they're comfortable supporting Glenn Beck. Their public relations guy kind of had a meltdown, and he's basically explained that he's a right-wing, you know, lunatic, so he's comfortable with that. But, you know, 1-800-PetMeds, for example, they're just resistant to the idea of engaging in politics. But, you know, we keep trying, and unfortunately they're losing business, and that's just the way it is.
Let me ask you one other question, and that is, when you listen to, for purposes of your research, do you listen to Beck on an over-the-air station, or do you listen on Sirius or the Internet or what?
Yeah, I record Beck's shows every day, and I actually listen. There's a program that lets you record live radio broadcasts, and so I actually listen through my computer, and then I record it so that I can make transcripts if I need to and send them around to certain advertisers. And I always let advertisers know they made the right decision, so if he does touch on something that is really very unappealing to their demographic, I'm always sure to let them know, even though they already dropped them, to let them know that Glenn Beck is still at it, so that they don't return. Because the reality is that Murdoch is very wealthy, News Corp is very wealthy, they hate the idea that they're losing, and so they're constantly pushing back at advertisers, encouraging them to return. And so it's important that we keep up the pressure on those that have made the responsible decision, and I like to let them know that, you know, their decision was the right one by constantly reinforcing it.
Well, okay, the reason I asked that question is because in any radio broadcast, you know, if it's Limbaugh or Beck or Hannity or whomever, there are local availabilities and then there are national availabilities. And the the national ads are your ServPros, your Nutrisystems, et cetera, in the Beck context. What do you do with Harvey's Texaco free fill up on Fridays that runs in Beck?
Unfortunately, nothing. And, participants in the effort do sometimes target their local advertisers. Now, the reason why I have not targeted local advertisers is because, I'm in school, I have very limited resources, very limited time. And so I wanted to make sure that whatever I was doing, I was consistent about it. And so if I was only going to target, you know, 10% of those local advertisers, I didn't think that was fair, especially given that the local advertisers tend to be very small, and the way that they purchase their ads would be very difficult to track it down. And in terms of the money and the impact that would be received from dropping, it just wouldn't be worth the time investment as it stands now, given the limited resources. And since I couldn't do it in a fair way, I do make notes. I do keep in touch with people that are actively pushing their local advertisers, and sometimes they get them to drop, and that's a great thing. But, you know, until I can get a mechanism that can do it universally and fairly, I don't feel comfortable, you know, targeting at random a small local demographic.
Okay, and
but just to note, I do target as local advertisers, the big ones, on television, and that's because I actually can get access to all of his local advertisers, and the bigger buys, I actually do go after those.
Okay. And finally, with regard to this three-hour whatever we care to call it, the Beccapalooza, the White Stock, whatever, this past Saturday, it's been characterized a lot of different ways by a lot of different analysts. Do you have a particular take on what those 3 hours were?
Yeah, I believe that, I don't want to be reductionist here. I don't want to limit it to one thing. I mean, certainly it was ultimately a self-promotional event. But, what I'm sick and tired of on the left is always responding to the narrative presented to us by the right. We're always playing defense. And I would much prefer to shape a narrative. It doesn't mean lie, but it means explain it in a way that, that we believe to be the truth, that presents a more accurate picture. And one thing that has sort of dropped out entirely from this event is the fact that this is, I believe, and there's definitely strong evidence to suggest it, a prelude to Glenn Beck's book launch. And if you consider the genesis of 828, a year ago, he went down to Florida to announce his next book, and the original release date was actually 828. And the book is called The Plan. And, he then spent the last year, sort of hyping it up. He had these American revival events where people went, they paid money, he gave them a small binder, and they got lectured by these, what he considers to be experts. And, so he was really leading this build-up. At some point, in the wintertime, he got it through his head. He must have talked to his buddy, Sean Hannity, that, he can actually have an event without paying anything for it and actually paying tax-free, which conservatives love. All he had to do was link up with a charity. And that's what he did. And unfortunately, as you know, that comes with real legal consequences, and he was prohibited and restricted in many ways. And so what he did instead was slightly delay the launch of the book. But the book is intimately related to the tone and the theme that was presented at 828. And he even teased it at 828. There was a section of his speech in which he talked about the moral obligation to deal with the debt that is here, and he really harped on that. And that's exactly what the topic of his next book is. It's called The Plan, to restore trust, truth, and treasure. And just to draw a further association here, it was a big event, so they had hotel deals. If you wanted to get the discount at any of the hotels, the discount code was the title of his new book. To suggest that there was not some promotional synergy here is simply false. And, it's something that Glenn Beck is very sensitive to. And when Alliance started making these claims and trying to push this narrative, they hit back hard in multiple sources. And that's because it really cheapens the event. And I think that it's important that we don't lose sight of the full context here. And ultimately, it's about Glenn Beck. When you really link it up, it is very clear that this is the prelude to his next book launch. It really legitimizes and makes the case for it in moral terms. And you'll see him start to harken back to this event a lot as he begins and further gears up his next launch, which he's only delayed by about 5 or 6 weeks. It'll be released in October now instead of August.
That is amazing, and I think you're absolutely right, Angelo, that it was overlooked, and it bears repeating. Let me close by sort of putting a little bow on this whole conversation and going back to something you mentioned early on, and that is accountability. You talked about accountability in other terms, but I want to ask you specifically, what happens? What happens when it already has happened. I'm not going to say a madman, because these people have been tried, they've been convicted. They were convicted as perfectly sane, capable of standing trial adults. What happens when a person walks into a church and guns down 6 or 7 people and leaves a manifesto saying, Glenn Beck told me to kill the liberals? At what point, for God's sakes, Ozzy Osbourne was tried. Judas Priest was tried over suicides. Okay? When do we begin to get some criminal accountability for what these people are egging their acolytes and followers onto?
Right. Yeah, I think that part of the issue there is that when liberal commentators and people critical of their role in really ginning up this sort of violence, when they do try to make the case against Glenn Beck, for instance, I think they overreach. Now, I'm of the opinion that he's certainly inciting it. But in terms of winning a public debate, which is what we need to do, we need to raise the awareness of this and increase the pressure for some accountability. We need to make reasonable claims that all people can get their heads around. And whether or not Glenn Beck is inciting violence or anything like that, okay, we can have that debate. But there's one thing that's incontrovertible. He validates it. He convinces people that their essential life is under direct risk, and then he identifies the targets, and he espouses willful lies about them. And whether or not he's telling people to kill them, like I said, up for debate. I'll be very generous. We'll debate that. But he validates it. He convinces people that it's the acceptable and only option in order to save themselves. And at that point, it's just uncontestable. And so I think we can stop overreaching. We don't have to accuse them of being, you know, of Glenn Beck holding the trigger with the guy. Although I'm comfortable with that. But if we want to win the public debate, I think we need to talk more about what it is they're doing exactly. And that is validating this violence, because they're doing it through their lies and through identifying the targets and through really whipping people up into a frenzy. And I think if we just stopped overreaching just a little bit, we bring more people to our side, more people would say, you know what, now it's not just two sides of the same coin, which I think a lot of people in the middle tend to dismiss it. They tend to dismiss the arguments when you overreach. And so what I would say is, fine, let's not have that debate. It's validation, period. Help us stop. And I think that would be more persuasive to getting the kind of public pressure that we need to bring the accountability that comes in. Because unfortunately, our government is toothless at this point, and they're afraid. They're afraid of the right-wing machine, and we saw many examples of that, and I think it's time that we counteract that. We really boost the government. We help it work. And the only way to help it make it work is by bringing in the popular support for it. And that's going to require a better narrative, better messaging, more persuasiveness, and something that people can all agree on, or most people can agree on. And those are the kinds of ideas that I would like to sort of harness and push out there.
That is the best explanation that I have yet heard, Angelo, because I've described these things in terms of accessories before the fact. The particular case being the Tides Foundation. No one, not Hannity, not Limbaugh, not Savage, none of them, not Bortz, any of these, the second tier talkers. No one had focused on the Tides Foundation except Glenn Beck.
That's right.
And then a guy straps on a bulletproof vest. And lucky for the rest of the world, he got liquored up before he left.
Right, right.
But he was going to go and shoot up the Tides Foundation.
Yes, he was.
And you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly about the validation issue. But, you know, if somebody stands there and says to you, your next-door neighbor is coming to murder you and rape your wife and daughters, I know it. I know that. I just know it. Here's some gasoline. Well, you can prosecute that guy.
I believe it.
And, you know, you're absolutely right about a toothless government and a toothless criminal, toothless criminal justice system. But I think at some point in time, we're going to have to confront the fact that, they do validate it, and they don't just validate it, they celebrate it and they revel in it.
Absolutely, they do. And then, of course, when you attack them for it, when you ask them, please don't encourage people to kill people, they bunker down and say, can you believe what these crazy liberals are suggesting? They're suggesting that we're blowing up buildings. It's like, well, no, we're not saying that. We're just saying that you're encouraging people to do that through your lies and identifying targets that are non-existent enemies. And, you know, unfortunately, this is in order to get the kinds of objectives that we want, we're just going to have to do a different kind of job of getting more people on our side. I wish we had a responsible government, but the reality is that these conservatives have hollowed out our institutions and privatized whatever they could squeeze out of the government so much that things are barely functioning anymore. And so, you know, we have a difficult time grasping just how bad things have gotten, because I think we're afraid to acknowledge it, because what that means is an awful lot of action that would be required on our part, and it's really hard to cognize it, to get our heads around it, and then fix it, and then, of course, solve the problems. And so we don't really talk about just how damaged our public institutions are, both our governmental institutions and, of course, our other public institutions. And, you know, that's part of the reason why we're in this state right now. I mean, these guys dominate the narrative. They dominate the conversation through their deceit, and it has real destructive consequences. Not just policy-wise, but people's lives are in danger. I mean, abortion doctors are getting killed, you know, and we have other problems, and it's just these, there's now directed targets here through right-wing violence, right-wing-inspired violence. And the only way that we're going to challenge that is to really make the case to most people that these people are crossing the line, and we're going to have to appear more reasonable than them and more persuasive. And I just want to make arguments that are incontrovertible. But I agree they should be prosecuted. They should be punished. I do think that they venture into the territory of unprotected speech on many examples. And I just wish there was some accountability, but unfortunately there isn't. And so that's why this effort continues.
Take it to the free market. Exactly. Angelo Casserone, thank you very, very much. I really, really appreciate the time that you've shared with us this evening. And I hope you will update us as things continue. And if you've got a launch coming up on Rush Limbaugh, we sure want to hear about that as well.
Sure thing.
All right.
Thank you for all the work that you do, Bob.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care, and we'll talk soon, I hope.
Okay.
And good luck with graduation.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Angelo Casserone, the man behind StopBeck.com. StopBeck.com. You know what? Go and have a look. Take a long look. Because he really has provided a template for anyone who wants to do this. And I get the sense that he's not doing it for status. This is a brilliant man. He's going, whatever he chooses to do when he gets out of law school, he's going to do well at it. And he's going to be a very effective advocate. So I don't get the sense that he's another guy who's out there trying to carve out a niche to make a living out of the internet. You can hear the genuineness of what he's doing in his voice. Now here's the trick. You heard him say it. It's something one person can do. One person. There are thousands of one persons in this audience. What could you do? Be calm, be dispassionate. Like any problem, if you are, and believe me, I've got a real sense of this kind of stuff. If you are beset by problems, all of which seem equally daunting and thoroughly unreachable, look around you. Find the simplest one there is, and focus on that, and solve it. Just solve it. And when you've got that one done, the next hardest one will be that much easier. Are you sick of your airwaves being polluted by Glenn Beck, by Sean Hannity, by Rush Limbaugh? Because they are, after all, your airwaves. They don't belong to advertisers. The public airwaves were never, never intended as a vehicle for the market or for hustling anything. There is a degree of accountability that has to come into play. You can do this too. Do you have a right? And, you know, that's one of the reasons that there are 1,000 hours of right-wing hate for every hour of liberal talk is because every city, every market of any significance, even America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, has a right-wing ideologue that's on from 9 a.m. to 11:30 every weekday morning. Every city has one. Every town has one. But if every town that has a right-wing ideologue abusing the public trust and abusing the public airwaves would do something similar to what Angelo Casserone has done with StopBeck.com, we would soon return to a much more civil level of discourse in this country. And that's a fact. He has done brilliant work. But you know what? It's brilliant work that you could do too. Just saying. Just saying. It's 11 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a little break and come back to your phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I do love me some Idea Radio. 20 minutes past the hour. This is the Horn. I'm Bob. And you know what? That was a solid half hour of that was a half hour packed with meaning and with content and with ideas. And it's part and parcel of what this is, of what we hope to be accomplishing here. It's not like right-wing radio by any stretch of the imagination. This is, you know, this is real. This isn't any made-up history. You heard Angelo talk about the fact that Beck had these little meetings going on where he would, and he did some of it this past Saturday at the Beckapalooza, the book launch for all intents and purposes, where he presented some of that phony baloney made up history. As I tweeted early on, it would take me a 6-hour show to go through the first 5 minutes of historical inaccuracies. But you know what? If you don't know history, you don't know it's inaccurate, and that is what the right wing counts on and preys on. I'm going to go straight to the phones here in just a moment. No, let's go straight to the phones right now. I hate to keep people waiting. You know how I feel about that. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Bob. This is Megan.
Well, hey, Megan. Welcome back.
Hey, I'm sorry about yesterday. I apologize. But not only did my cell phone drop the signal, but my battery was completely dead.
Oh, I hate that when it happens.
Yeah. So, first of all, I wanted to offer my condolences on the outcome of the election in West Virginia. I actually didn't find out about it until Monday when I saw on, I believe it was like Huffington Post, that Joe Manchin had got the nomination.
Yeah, but, that's not good news.
Oh, God. Not only that, but God love you for watching Beck's Come to Jesus meeting on Saturday. I tried watching it on C-SPAN, and I think my stomach actually revolted at the first, in the beginning when he was showing his little montage of, was it 9/11 and the civil rights thing of 1964 and Martin Luther King's speech, and then he was talking about himself, and I'm sitting here going, what exactly is he trying to accomplish with this except to bring in as many weighty historical figures to lend weight to what he's doing, but it has absolutely no rhyme or reason whatsoever?
You know, Megan, I saw an editorial cartoon earlier today that showed Beck standing in front of the seated Lincoln, and Lincoln was just sitting there in a sort of huddled up in a little ball. And the Park Service guy next to him said, he's been that way since Beck started.
God, I just kept, I really wish that someone sort of resurrected Martin Luther King and he would just come up and just smack him upside the head. Seriously, I had to turn it off after a while, but I kind of found it interesting. I went through like Fox and CNN and MSNBC, and I found it interesting. C-SPAN was the only one that really covered it in its entirety at all. The other stations just seem to have on an endless loop the anniversary of the Katrina disaster, and they meeting like 5-minute intervals, and even that's being generous. So I was kind of curious. I mean, I didn't really see any extended coverage on the major news networks except C-SPAN.
You know, there wasn't. Now, if you went over to the internets, Megan, I guess there were, as David from Maine mentioned last night on the program, there was a Ustream stream that had, you know, 100,000 people on it.
Oh, God.
And there was a Facebook stream that had, you know, the gaboodles of people on it, you know, watching that whole little Klan rally.
Oh, God.
But you're right, and that's why I sat through the 3 hours of it. By the time it was over, Agnes was ready to leave me.
Now, see, that criminal right there is,
Oh, that was spouse abuse. I admit it.
Surgery. And she's got to, you know, listen to that. And I think, the Son of God comment, I'm sitting here like, you know, are they going to drag out a cross? Is he really going to be crucified in front of all these people? I mean, how far are they going to take this?
I don't know. If he really does crack, it was a while back that, what was the name of the movie? Keith Olbermann referenced it. The character's played by Andy Griffith. The character's name's Lonesome Rhodes. And eventually the guy, A Face in the Crowd, was that it?
And I'm not sure.
Yeah, but eventually he comes unglued. And eventually Beck will come unglued. Because just as I noted last night, Megan, there's only so far that the money will take you if you don't have anything undergirding you. If you don't have any substance. Now, this is a guy who dropped out of high school, or maybe made it through high school just barely, or something like that. And I could have been like that, because he was promoted into a morning zoo crew slot doing, you know, the morning zany radio thing on the FM dial. And he worked his way up through the ladder doing that. And was abusing booze and abusing drugs all along the way. It's rather a typical story. And then some. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
Oh, I was just saying. At this point, I'm waiting for the men in white coats to just come and take him away during his program. You know, someone had told me, and I didn't hear this directly, that he had made a crack about Holocaust ovens making good pizzas. Now he's making fun of Nancy Pelosi by vomiting into a bucket. He actually, there's a YouTube video where he's actually, you know, he's trying to use the frog boiling in water.
Oh, yeah, right.
He actually did that on his show. And I'm sitting here like, are we just going to sit around and watch him just pull all these crazy stunts? And, you know, I just can't.
Well, I think Angelo draws a very, very important distinction, Megan, and that is that there is a difference between what goes out on his radio show over the public airwaves and that which happens on his cable TV show. There's not a lot that can be done about what's on cable TV except for the economic pressure that Angelo has been bringing to bear. On the other hand, the radio, the public airwaves, belong to us. And the fact of the matter is, we've got to get better at advocating more stringent stewardship of those airwaves. You know, honest to God, it drives me crazy that the FCC, you know, had that big hissy over Janet Jackson's breast, but on no less than three occasions I've heard in afternoon drive time. And one of the times was when my children were little, you know, toddlers.
Oh my God.
Going down the road, and stupid me, you know, I listened to this stuff because I hate it. And I had, and it was, you know, just right before Agnes looked at me and said, "Turn that filth off, Bob." That Limbaugh was on there, and he told that he was very proud of himself and thought he was really engaging in high comedy, when he was in the middle of the day, mind you. Was talking about some woman who had had a female-to-male sexual reassignment surgery, and he said, and my friends, there is a medical terminology for the name of that surgery. It's called an adidectomy. And he repeated that punchline three times in 10 minutes. But that was okay with the FCC. The human breast, filthy.
Well, not to add insult to injury, every time I turn on the TV, there seems to be another... wasn't there an ad for Viagra where a bunch of guys were playing banjos? And I've seen that aired, like, you know, during the daytime, during normal programming, not even cable TV. And I'm sitting here like, you know, Janet Jackson, who created such a drama? And, you know, your ads for this drug are being advertised, you know, in broad daylight. And, you know, Rush Limbaugh, I can get... I can get, you know, Bill O'Reilly in the middle of the day on my AM stations up here, you know, but to listen to your show, I got to call in on my cell phone.
Yeah, right, and we need to work through some stuff so you can actually listen on your cell phone. So it can't, and that's the whole point of what we're doing here at the Horn. If you spend any time at all, Megan, listening to over-the-air terrestrial radio right now, there's nothing there. There's absolutely nothing there. It's all been turned into a vehicle for advertising, and there's next to no music worth listening to, and where commercial radio is concerned, zero talk or information radio worth listening to, with a few notable exceptions like Malloy and Hartman and a few others. And the future is on the internet, because, you know, like, for instance, and this is not a product plug because I hate them. But if you've got a smartphone through AT&T, for instance, you have to carry a data plan. Well, you may as well get some good out of that data plan, and what's happening is people are beginning to be able to stream their radio through their phone devices or through a tethered device. It was years ago that our buddy Alan, who was an over-the-road truck driver, was listening to the Horn driving down the road via the internet. You know, and that's really the future. You know, they don't make cars with cigarette lighters in them anymore. Well, and they don't put ashtrays in them anymore. Well, there's going to come a time when they don't put terrestrial radios in them. It'll all be internet connected.
God, I sure hope so. Because I'm not sure. I have a Motorola Karma through AT&T. I don't think it's a smartphone. And when I looked on the Head On Radio Network's website, I think they mentioned like the iPhone. I don't think I have that.
No. There's an iPhone one, and there's an Android. I tell you, you told me it's a Motorola Karma. I'll do some research and see if I can't get you an email back to you. It depends on whether or not you do. You get your can you get your email on your phone?
I can. Well, I got web-based email anyway, but I can access the web through my phone. I believe I have the data plan.
Well, if you've got a data plan, we can get you the Horn on your phone.
Okay, but yeah, I just, when I saw on the website, it was, I think it mentioned, like, the iPhone, and I was just like, oh, crud, because I don't think...
No, we're just building more stuff along through there, you know, because there's different operating systems and so forth. You know, there's Windows, and there's the Palm operating system, and there's Android, and yada, yada, yada. But all of this, you know, we are adding to that list, and also, since you've got that Karma... Motorola Karma, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm jotting it down just to keep me from forgetting. I'll look into it and see what we need to do to make it possible for you to stream the Horn over your phone. And you will be, and Megan, and Megan, you will become a part of the future.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
I'm awfully glad to get to talk to you, and I'm glad the call didn't drop this time, and don't be a stranger.
I won't. Thanks, Bob. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Megan. Bye now.
Bye.
You know, and that's not me promoting the Horn. That's all kinds of internet broadcasting. It is the future. Now, the problem with our side is that a whole bunch of our side hasn't figured out it's the future. We're still, you know, on the left, we're still putting up rabbit ears and trying to figure out why it is that the 50-watt flickering candle flame station in Cincinnati is getting blown away by the 50,000-watt blowtorch. No, there's no liberal radio in Cincinnati. That's just an example. But we continue. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, would you like to just learn a little bit about the LDS Church?
Go right ahead, yes.
Okay. the reason I called in, you know, the antenna went up and all this, when your guest mentioned the fee for getting groceries delivered. Bingo. Okay. Here's the deal. It is a primary tenet of the LDS Church that they're following the Holocaust. The Mormon Church will feed the world. But there's a kicker.
Wait, what Holocaust?
Well, there's going to be a Holocaust.
Okay, see, you're this is a teachable moment, Susan. I didn't know.
Yeah, it's, you know, your standard biblical, you know.
Frogs, you know, locusts, rain of fire, yeah. Rivers of blood, the works?
Yeah, you have biblical proportions, the whole nine yards. Okay, following that, there's, you know, the Mormon Church is going to be feeding the peoples of the earth. But there's a kicker. The only ones they're going to be feeding
are the ones who convert.
Exactly.
Yeah, dear.
Now, you see, even now...
So when the Holocaust comes, is there going to be a turf battle between, like, the fundamentalist evangelical Christians trying to line up the Jews to kill them and the Mormons trying to line up people to starve them unless they convert? And then, I mean, is this just a big playoff system, Susan?
No. Because, you see, the Mormons have kind of a better system, I guess, if you want to consider it that way. They're not going to line people up and kill them. They're just not going to bother to feed them, and then they're going to die. And that's the way that's going to work. They don't have to line them up to kill them. What do you do when you don't have any food? You die. Simple.
Convert or die.
Convert or die. Now, even now, before the Holocaust, any Mormon in good standing in any ward in the country, if they have problems, financial problems, to the point where they cannot feed their children, can go to their local church. And the church will feed them.
Well, didn't they dig into their grain silos and stuff right after Katrina?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
But,
it's real. And they're big stockpilers.
Okay.
Angelo... If you get people buying seeds of faith or seeds of blood and buying food insurance, they are by definition all already sucked into the Mormon machine, and then all you got to do is explain to them about how the angel moron came down and yada yada yada, and we're all done.
Yeah, at one point they have owned several supermarket chains. I don't know if they still do. They used to, I don't know if they still do, but at one point they owned Albertsons here in the Pacific Northwest. And that was a big honking supermarket chain. For all I know, they still do. And they, you know, they, one of the reasons why they were willing just to put it, you know, in icy cold business terms, one of the reasons why they were willing to give supplies to the Katrina victims, Mormons don't believe in waste, honey.
So if it was going to go to waste anyway, you might as well give it to the people in the disaster?
And that's why they give it to their own parishioners, because they have to rotate their stock.
Jesus God.
Honest to God.
Now, you know what? No, I don't doubt you in the least, Susan. And there are these people work, you know, under the radar, and, you know, the only time you ever see them, they're wearing dark pants and a white shirt and a skinny black tie, riding a bicycle and not drinking coffee. And so, yeah, well, they're weird, but, you know, hey, they're so whole.
Not drinking soda or anything like that has caffeine in it.
Right, no stimulants.
Then,
you know, they're kind of weird, but they're harmless. There's nothing harmless about them. You know, my kids went wild over the Twilight series. But if you dig into that with any kind of a critical eye at all, you know what that thing is? Huh?
Yeah.
Howdy do. It's, I mean, who would imagine with vampires, but it's a Mormon morality play.
Now, if you want vampires for sheer fun and games, I'll give you the titles of some vampire.
Oh, no. No, don't you dare. We are vampire poor in this house, okay? But no, my main point was that the Twilight series in particular is it is to vampire fantasy, wolfman fantasy fiction, what C.S. Lewis with the Chronicles of Narnia was to teen and preteen Christian apologia.
Or what the Left Behind series was to
for the fundies.
To the fundies, yes. It's, you know, yeah, I don't know what else dear old Beckerhead was doing, but what I do know one thing, what he was doing, he was proselytizing.
Sure he was, but he was doing it, but he was doing it with kid gloves.
Yeah, because the Mormons are not well thought of in this country. Now, personally, I don't see why. I figure of all these religions, they all, you feed them into a computer, and they all will make the computer go gaga. None of them make sense. I'm sorry, folks, if I've offended anybody, but...
No, I just remember the chorus. I just remember the chorus of the South Park Mormon song when they did the history of the history of the Mormons on South Park. The chorus of the Joseph Smith song was dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
Well, it's not just a Mormons, it's a Baptist.
Oh, sure. No. Make no mistake. I'm not, no. No, if you bring it, you know, oh, that religion's crazy. You'll never catch me being guilty of that. Because they are all lunacy. Because sooner or later, every religion is going to ask you to believe something unbelievable, i.e., dumb or stupid.
I'm not just picking on Christians either. I'm picking on Jews. I'm picking on Muslims. I'm picking on, almost every religion, although, you know, Buddhist is more of
No,
I have to check.
There's too many varieties. But when you know when you're sitting there spinning pinwheels and you think that that's you know working off your karma or whatever, you know that because you can just went walking down a wall.
Yeah.
No, that's loopy too.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I only said that because I have checked into it personally. I have checked into the others, and they're all, I'm sorry, illogical.
Well, sooner or later, every religion is going to ask you to believe something on faith without knowing it in your mind. And the minute that you're asked to do that, you know that you are inside the dodge.
Yeah, it's all a con. Now, admittedly, it's your particular con. Everybody has their own con that gives them comfort. Fine, great, wonderful. Whatever gets you through the night. I love it.
I think you're trying to get me to play that song, so I'm going to.
No. Just don't make it part of the law. Don't make it a requirement for public office. Do not incorporate it into the government.
Not that hard to grab, is it?
Sign up for no theocracy.
Yeah, I'll take a powder on it, too. Susan, thanks a million. And no more vampire. We got enough vampire books. Thanks.
I might slip one to Agnes. And then she'll turn around and jump your bones.
No, stop. This is a family radio program. And she's not allowed to do that for a while anyway. No bone jumping.
Anyway, I just wanted to let you know that that was one of the basic tenets of the Mormon religion. So they got some fun ones.
Well, at least I know where the cornbread's going to be. You know, when the 4, 5, or 12 horsemen of the
That's where all the preserving and the canning come from that he was mentioning.
Oh, Jesus. You know, my grandmother canned, but that didn't make her a Mormon. Hey.
No, it doesn't make me a Mormon either. I can because I'm cheap. I'm cheap. I don't want to pay retail for things.
I found a jar of bread and butter pickles that had been given to me by a neighbor, and I just found them today. I'm going to get into them tonight after the show. I love me some bread and butter pickles.
Yum.
Susan, have a wonderful night.
Yeah, you too. Love to Agnes and the kids.
All right, take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And if you want to jump into the program, do feel free. You know, Susan mentioned that song last night, too. So let's get this out. You know, it's like Beetlejuice, you know, three times. She's mentioned it twice, so we're going to run it now just because I love the song. Plus the fact that several years ago, this was actually the intro music for the very first incarnations of Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. Get your money while you ride, it's all right, it's all right. Don't need a song to drop you down with. Oh, no. Oh, no. Whatever gets you through your life,
sax. Man. The late great prophet John Lennon, peace be upon him. Whatever gets you through the night. Yeah, that really was. That was intro music for my show years and years and years ago when I was on the air in the fifth smallest radio market in America. A couple of lines open if you want to jump in. I'm going to go back to the ones that are still blinking, but a couple of lines open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And let's see if you're still here. Nope, you're not. How about you? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Gonzo, greetings. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, Spike, what's up, man?
Well, still reeling from the idiot stock of the weekend. Ideologue stock or...
White stock.
I don't want to just come off around. Obviously, it was more white people than anything. But there was a fair amount, I think, of African-American Baptists sprinkled about in there as well. Since the Baptist Church has done a really good job at brainwashing all their members, and they are a large number of African-Americans in this country who are Baptists. So they are some that are, drinking the Kool-Aid, which we've heard from some of the most extreme ones early on in the Obama administration, who sounded like they could have been that Chappelle's character in the first episode of Black Klansman. Alan Keyes is out there, so we do know who they are.
No, see, like I said, Spike, he co-opted so many different images and so many different memes. Last night I said that, if I'd heard the word Grok or Thou Art God, that, I was straight into the tequila bottle. I was waiting for, so he is the Kwisatz Haderach. Why not?
Yeah, one of the more interesting things, really calling him out, of course, was on Sojourner's website, really calling out the historical inaccuracies of how he recalls Dr. King and pointing out, quite handedly, in one piece, both of them were written by, Dr. Valerie Dixon, King was a highly outspoken critic of the Vietnam War, and meanwhile, this was also a bit of a pro-war rally in the name of Dr. King, which is very laughable, if I'm going to quote the Jesus from The Big Lebowski. And, it's just funny that, people who know of religion who aren't drinking Kool-Aid look at this as a real way of making Jesus and religion look foolish. And just the fact that it was nothing more than a cheap exploitation to make a buck and get some more publicity, essentially enabling greed. Of course, we won't hear the mainstream media quoting people who you might hear on Sojourners, because, Sojourners, they're those crazy Christians who remember the part of the Bible about, taking care of the poor, and, the last person who should have to die to protect anyone should have been Jesus. These crazy things that I remember from Sunday school that make me like a liberal, and people like Phil Donahue, Michael Moore, those of us who somehow we walked away with this crazy idea that they, when they were busy trying to brainwash us, that we picked up on the positive message, not the insane ones that many of them were trying to instill. You're not going to hear that too much in the mainstream media. We're going to hear how big of a deal Beck is. How much bigger things are. And by the way, if you go to my Twitter account out there, it's twitter.com/SpikeRogan, SpikeRogan. And I've done that once or twice on radio. And I have a link to one of the Sojourner's pieces, and I have a link to a Buchanan commentary on it, which he starts to kind of ramble in a little bit in that, as in maybe this was the peak of the Tea Party and they're going to start becoming more irrelevant with time. As he tries to claim it, like Obama supporters, which might be slightly true. He might over-embellish the amount of people that are at the crowd, but I find it interesting that he's one of many out there who are also kind of wondering if someone might have, not to make this too edgy, shot a credibility wad of late, and it's only a matter of time before, people are going to, even on the right, are going to get a little tired of Beck at this point. And can I add one thing? Glenn Beck with a bulletproof vest, who was he afraid was going to shoot him? The liberals who hate guns?
I know.
I would think that means he's afraid of his own maniac audience. He's not.
Because he has, that was a hand prop. All right, let's be clear about this. That was a hand prop, Spike. That was for his audience to see that he was wearing one, because he's warned them about how the progressives are the violent ones. You know, meanwhile, his followers are, like I said, strapping on their own bulletproof vest, getting liquored up and going to shoot up the Tides Foundation.
Right, or going and peeing on prayer rugs and
well, there's that, yeah. Brooklyn. Or slashing the throats of cabbies, right.
Right.
Consider this a checkpoint.
By the way, I would, and then what he said in Arabic was actually, peace be with you, which doesn't go with what he did. But the other thing, with that urinating on the prayer rug thing, the best piece on that, comically speaking, was, on Colbert, just to once again throw another Big Lebowski reference in one call, where he plays different clips about, you know, them peeing on the dude's rug and, oh, yeah, it's great. If you got
it, you know, it really pulled the room together.
Yeah, and they peed on your bleeping rug. but by the way, of all the John Goodman characters of all time, Walt in The Big Lebowski is maybe my favorite. I almost was Walt for Halloween last year.
This is not Vietnam. There are rules.
Anytime I operate a semi-automatic pistol, I actually think of that scene when I'm first loading up. Only I pointed at paper targets, not people. But, yeah, or for that matter, the drop-off where he dives out of the car and the Uzi goes off in the street.
Yeah,
and,
Walt, you know, just... Now, look, let's understand. I mean, let's study that metaphor for a minute, because I've got another one to go with it. I happened to be in the living room earlier today, and I sat down. Agnes was in there. We were having our coffee together. And lo and behold, there was a rerun of All in the Family on Spike. It wasn't on Spike, because I don't want to confuse anybody, because there's a channel called Spike, isn't there?
And I got no royalties for that one.
Yeah, no kidding. No respect. but there was a rerun of All in the Family. I think it was on TV Land. And it was pre-end of the Vietnam War. And I sat there because, you know, I hadn't watched it in years, and I was a kid when it was on. And I just sat and I listened to the words coming out of Archie Bunker's mouth. And I realized something, Spike. Archie Bunker is the philosophical father of the modern teabagger movement.
Yeah, of the American conservative movement of late.
Yeah.
He certainly, that because the Republican Party only has one basic demographic left
behind. It was a great episode, yeah. Because he had a confrontation with that liberal who was running for city council or whatever. And
Pinko Commie?
Oh, yeah, Pinko Commie. Yeah. You liberals, you know, if you liberals get your way, we're going to be flushed right down the turlet. And then, of course, the capper of it all was, you know, he was going to go, you know, he only voted in your, not only vote in your big elections, your president, your senator, your congressperson, you know, your mayor. So he did, but he was so angered by the liberal running for, a liberal woman running for city council that he went to vote, and it turned out he hadn't registered to vote in 11 years.
Well, a lot of Sarah Palin's fans fit that description.
And he couldn't vote. I just sat there. I wondered if the programming people at TV Land if it was just dumb luck that was in the rotation, or if maybe there was a little something behind it, you know, some sort of vast left-wing media conspiracy.
No, it was Viacom totally did that one by mistake. The only liberal programming they give us is between 11 and midnight on Comedy Central.
Oh, that's the truth.
And by the way, the only accurate source of news on television, more from that, and now that the Daily Show decided to take a 10-day vacation because they wanted to hang out in California for a little while with the Emmys, that means basically there's no new sources of accurate news on television right now. But at least we'll have them down the stretch, calling out the other news networks. Because I really wish someone could actually do an accurate estimate on the crowd. From the aerial shot, I say 80,000 people were at that thing. Definitely not a half million like they're trying to claim.
But remember, Spike, this is miracle math made easy.
Yeah.
All they have to do is imagine that there were a half a million people. It's romper room.
Yeah.
Okay? I see you and you and you and a half a million more of you. Now there are a half a million of you. See how it works?
But, you know, because I find hard to... there were still people in the city of Lynchburg what was going on, so they couldn't have gotten a half million to show up. Some of them had to stay at their jobs. But,
what jobs? Finally, they're retired. His demographic is almost as old as O'Reilly's.
No, I can tell you, in places like Central Virginia, there's a lot of younger people who are buying into this malarkey. That's on the slightly frightening side. Maybe not in more educated places, but places where they've been kind of lied to from the womb almost. Yeah, they're believing in this rhetoric at an earlier age. So it's but he's a cheap imitation of Howard Stern. Instead of fart man, I call him roid rage, since we know exactly it's not steroids that I'm referencing with Glenn Beck. And by the way, I'd just like to add one last thing, since they made it such a faith fest. If he has so much faith in God, wouldn't he not need the bulletproof vest?
Yeah, that kind of goes without saying, doesn't it? Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
he doesn't really believe.
Well, no, as a Mormon, you know, they claim that the magic underwear stops bullets. No kidding.
Well, there's magic underwear that holds off flames for a little while you wear if you drive a race car, but I never heard of it stopping a bullet.
Oh, they claim it. They claim it.
I don't know of any Mormon race car drivers. So, probably because they couldn't fit everyone in the family in the same car.
Oh God! See, this is not. But this is not anti-Mormon. This is anti-silly. You know exactly. Hey, Spike, I got to roll on, brother. But this is great.
Hey, one last thing.
Sure.
Locally, the big news story around here is Scott Ritter's in court here.
Really?
Yeah, some local small town police department of a sleepy town, who normally their biggest thing is they bust people growing pot or selling pot, which was often rumored it was actually someone bigger shaking down competitors using the police. They got in this kick lately of doing an online sting trying to find people trying to have sexual contact with minors, and essentially luring people to the area who'd never come from here, because they're always busting people from, like, California, all these far-off places. And Scott Ritter was one of them, so he was in our local courthouse, which I'll be across the street from tomorrow, at a county commissioner's meeting. And so his trial started, and he's on trial for exposing himself to what he thought was a 15-year-old and stuff. Yeah, so, and our local
paper
is Poking a Record. So if you go to PoconaRecord.com, you can see all about this story. I'm sure it's only going to explode soon enough into a national story. I'm surprised it really hasn't gone national yet, since we're only, you know, 2 hours away from New York City and 2.5 from Philly. But how this has kind of stayed a local Northeast PA media market story is beyond me. But, yeah, it's only a matter of time. I mean, and we've known for a while he's had that problem. It doesn't discredit the reality of what he portrayed about what was going on in Iraq.
No, but the fact of the matter is, it will be used to do that.
Oh, and it was back, you remember it back in, before we went into Iraq, when
sure.
He was going out against it. The New York Post leaked the thing about him having this going on. So, yeah, of course it'll be used to discredit him, even though, in all honesty, you know, when he was in Iraq, he wasn't anywhere near children, so he was pretty effective in what he did. Much like when people who are serial rapists are in prison, they're usually role model prisoners around nothing.
You know, I don't even understand how those stings work, and I don't understand the mindset of people who get into that. So,
yeah,
on my part, the less said, the better. You know, Jesus criminy.
Yeah, but. But I wouldn't be shocked too if it gets thrown out, just for the fact that I question why the small police department that did it, not even like the state police or, you know, because he never would have shown up in that little.
Well, meanwhile, here in West Virginia, a court threw out allegations of priestly rape just the other day in a small county here. So. Jesus.
So, lesson learned: if you oppose choice, you can be a pedophile.
Yeah, right, or if you're going to do if you're going to do a pedophilia, wear a Roman collar. You know.
Yeah.
Ugh, God, yeah. I need a shower now. Spike, take it easy, brother.
All right, have a good one.
See ya. Bye now. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Megan again. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I tried getting the show on my netbook, but it kept backing up, and the hourglass icon kept turning over and kept dropping the program, so I called back.
Oh, just to listen online?
Yeah, tried to listen online, but my netbook, it kept dropping the...
Okay, well, let me put you back on hold, and we'll get this all sorted out, trust me, okay?
Thank you.
All right, stand by, Megan.
All right.
And we will get this all sorted out. No doubt about it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra, what's up?
I just wanted to comment on this, the war is over with, thank God.
Yeah, is that speech going on right now or something?
I guess, yeah, it's supposed to be at 8, so it's 5 here, so I guess it is. But I just was reading some of the, you know how they released some of the speech?
Yeah, oh yeah, they pre-released the text, right.
Yeah, well, this one is just killing me. Let's see. We have persevered because of a belief we share with the Iraqi people, a belief that out of the ashes of war, a new beginning could be born in this cradle of civilization. I mean, what? Out of the ashes of war?
Oh, that's almost as gobbledygooky as everything that went on last Saturday.
No, that's not what I'm saying, but, you know, are we, like, trying to pretend that we didn't attack this country? I mean, because that statement sounds like there was some mutual war and
we just stepped in to help. Right.
And now we're coming to some sort of reconciliation. I'm sorry. It's just appalling, and apparently he wants to turn his focus back to the domestic issues that we're facing. It's like, yeah, you think, but so what? Now it's, yeah, we've been there, done that. You know, you're on your own, except for this 50,000.
Please accept our Laurel and Hardy handshake.
Yeah, except for the 50,000 troops that are remaining. Is that the right number? Am I wrong?
Well, or the State Department's mercenary force.
Well, that's just name changing, though, right?
Right.
And they're like advisors, like in Vietnam, right, or something?
Well, I understood that that the troops would be replaced. A lot of troops would be replaced with actual mercenaries, which means they're going to cost more.
Right, and
but no, we've got some garrison troops there. No getting around it.
Well, there's 74 bases there, so I would think that all of them aren't being packed up, right, or turned over to this sort of.
No! We ain't turning over none of that.
Well, to this so-called army that don't exist. They don't even have a government in power.
Well, there was a story, I saw it earlier today, and I got it on my laptop and not on the main computer here. But hasn't there been some report, Sandra, about millions and billions of dollars that were pumped into building buildings and hospitals and schools and stuff like that, and then we just abandoned them and left them to rot?
Oh, yeah, no, that happened quite early on and continuously over the last 7 years. You know, they got all the money and then they laid the foundation and then just abandoned these projects that were like, you know, 20 million here, 100 million, you know, just a lot of money. You know, and the thing, I don't know if you saw it, but that horrible David Brooks, it's like, dude, go back on vacation, because he's talking about Nation Building Works. That's the headline. And the article,
oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah, the article is just devoid of reality. It's so bizarre. It's like, are you kidding? It's just incredible because last I heard, they were blowing up shit left and right in Iraq over the last month. It's been off the hook there.
And you know, the thing that we have to be careful about, Sandra, is the right wing will now say, well, see, that's what happens when you pull out.
Well,
but the fact of the matter is, it was, and I've been arguing this since we went in, you know, we can't pull out now, it'll be chaos.
Well,
it's going to be chaos whenever we do.
Well, not only that, but the sort of, I forget the name of, so the SOFA agreement was signed by Bush, actually.
That's right.
This agreement that Obama is executing. But see, you know what? I have to say, once again, my sympathies, I don't have much sympathies because I keep looking forward, not back. And this is what happens, CEO asked, when you keep looking
forward and not back.
You're going to be blamed for every damn thing, Obama. This is the thing. It's like, dude, if you were to prosecute some of these freaks, because everything's being piled on this man, and it's really unfair because, you know, he didn't cause all this shit, but because he's not dealing, prosecuting the banksters, dealing with the war criminals, you see what I'm saying? Nothing's being rectified. You know, you can't have a system where the level of unfairness in the justice system, it's not going to work. I mean, that's one thing that most Americans are sort of trying to take for granted, that the justice system is somewhat equitable.
No, it's wholly dysfunctional, and we know from, what was her name, that awful woman that the Bush administration put in there. The entire Justice Department is Swiss cheesed, Sandra, with right-wing ideologues.
Right. Well, no, but it's just kind of, I mean, I know this is like redundant, but I keep going back to Michelle Bachmann and her pronouncement about what the hell they're going to be doing. They're going to, you know, go after Obama like there's no tomorrow. Yet they don't seem to have no understanding on our side about, you need to be prosecuting people. You should have been prosecuting people January 20th, 2009. Really?
Well, you know what? If the I got a rhetorical, mean, smart-ass question. If the Republicans do take the House in November of this year, and they start those investigations and they impanel an impeachment commission, do we all get to look at Nancy Pelosi and say, how's that impeachment's off the table working for you now, sister?
Well, no, exactly. I mean, no, but the thing is, though, it should just be obvious, though. I was just saying, it's, to me, I'm not really understanding the Democratic Party as it's constituted now anymore, Bob. I'm, like, completely confused by what they think they're doing, because the Republicans never hesitate. If they have one person in the majority, they will exercise that power, like, unbelievably so. So, I mean, is it a conspiracy or what? What's going on?
I wish I knew.
I mean, this is a serious question that I'm just racking my brain over. You know, oftentimes when I'm doing whatever, it just pops in my head. I'm like, what the hell? What am I missing in sort of the makeup of the Democratic Party that keeps them from dealing with their power and prosecuting, high government officials?
You would think, maybe it goes back to what Angelo was saying earlier, that, that we want to believe that the government works, but it doesn't. Maybe the time has come for us to at least admit that, and I'm not saying this in any teabagger sense, Sandra, but the government's broken.
Well, no, I heard
they broke it maybe past repair.
No, I heard your interview with was it Angelo you said?
Yeah,
I heard some of it. And, he was exactly the sort of privatization, the deliberate destruction of institutions, and it could be like you're saying, this is where we're at. And we're incapable. But on the other hand, what do we say when a year from now it's, go after Obama every day, though? What do we say about government then? Why is it working in that capacity?
Well, it won't be. It won't be. But at that point in time, the Republicans will be restoring our honor.
Oh, man.
I mean, come on. They haven't had an original idea since 1860.
Well, no, but it's interesting that they got rid of the special prosecutor. I always thought that when that happened, I thought, I'm sorry, that whole move.
Yeah, but you know what? They'll tell Obama to appoint one, and he'll comply.
Well, that's the thing. No, then this is what we were talking about yesterday, how I really fear for how he's going to react to it, I mean, yeah, I enjoyed his comment about, he has to wear his birth certificate on his forehead. I thought that was entertaining, but
right. But we're looking at some point. Am I politically naive, Sandra? That at some point I want some Harry Truman. that I want some FDR, that I want some John Kennedy, that I want some Teddy Roosevelt. You know, at one point, I just wanted to look, you know, if they say, hey, appoint a special prosecutor, I wanted to look up and say, suck it.
Well, no, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know who was, I think it was Tom Hartman. Somebody was playing some Roosevelt, you know, some of his speeches were like, the one where he said, oh, the bankers hate me and I love it. I welcome it. You see what I'm saying? I'm like, wow, why, you know what I'm saying? This fool.
Yeah, give me something to believe in.
This fool was saying, I don't give a, forget them, you know, I'm with you and we're going to deal with them. Cheers galore. I mean, the place was blew up with those comments. We didn't get nothing remotely looking like that from Obama. Never, ever, ever. You know, and I just don't understand why not. Because all it would take is a couple of sort of comments in that realm. He would get so many people on side just on the strength of that.
Well, let me ask you, hypothetically, Sandra. If he got irked, you know, because I believe in taking away the talking point before they get to start talking it. If President Obama got irked and he said, hey, I'm angry, and then he explained why he's angry, and then said, by the way, I'm black. I guess that makes me an angry black man. What do they got then? What's the other side got? Oh, he's an angry black man. Oh, he already said that. I guess we can't use it.
You know, I don't know.
I mean, when you're in a hole, A, you stop digging and you start trying to find a way out.
Well, no, but I'm still stuck on the idea that there is no election for him until whatever, November of 2012. He's the president of a weekend, but still the so-called most powerful country in the world, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, I don't care what color you are. I mean, the office, you know, utilize the office. And are they that backed up by the right-wing noise machine? It's just, I don't know.
Well, let's, just by example, let me share something with you. The Erie County, Ohio teabaggers have come out with a policy questionnaire. And in order to, you know, so that they can give, candidate ratings. And the answers to all of these are either agree, disagree, undecided, with a couple of, you know, asterisk things like, A, asterisk, pro-life with exceptions of rape or incest, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
This is the platform of, and you know what? Take out the word Ohio and replace it with any other state, and I don't think it changes, Sandra. One, and oddly enough, this is number one. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying at the beginning of the program about Joe Manchin and mountaintop removal and John Racy and my Senate vote here in West Virginia. You know, for years I criticized single-issue voters because I thought it was uninformed, I thought it was unenlightened, and I thought it showed a certain amount of political naivete. But when I look at Joe Manchin and John Racy, for instance, and I see two guys who believe in blowing up my home, the hell difference is there? And suddenly, you know, I didn't decide to be a single-issue voter. They made a single-issue voter out of me. But lo and behold, what's number one on the Erie County Teabaggers list manifesto, or whatever we want to call it? One, the right to life is a constitutional right. Two, and this is so funny that this is number two. The regulation of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere should be left to God and not government. And I oppose all measures of cap and trade as well as the teaching of global warming theory in our schools.
What?
Three, marriage is defined as being between a man and a woman. Any other type of union is not marriage. Four, children should not be placed into foster homes where the parents are homosexual, bisexual, or transgendered. And it goes on and on and on. And then we go down a little bit of the way. And there's this number. This is beautiful. This is number 12. I oppose card check for voting to implement a union, as this could give unions an unfair intimidation tactic to implement unionization. Now, they say that they're not part of the Republican Party. This is the Republican Party platform. And they're so godforsaken stupid, Sandra. Card check is already a part of the National Labor Relations Act.
Oh, my God. No, no. I mean, every time I hear that those sort of freaked out, you know, economic rules that the Republicans run with, it just kills me because it is not. It doesn't. It's not even related. In reality, what are they talking about?
But they don't. They don't exist in a rational universe.
No, but speaking of that, sorry, but I have to mention that horrible thing with that raccoon on his head, Nelson, is filibustering.
Sorry.
Is filibustering an attorney, an appointment for the Labor Relations Board.
Yeah.
And it's just like, are you kidding me? This board hasn't been fully staffed since when? 1978? Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
thank God there's a Democrat out there standing up to Obama. Oh, Jesus. Oh, that just puts me off my kibble.
No, it's just, I was like, damn, you know? Yeah, anyway, it just disturbed me. I'm thinking, wow, this, you know, he's like, that freak is wholly owned by Warren Buffett, first of all. And he's just some sort of freak. How is he going to filibuster something like this?
I'm not trying to be nasty or anything, but can Harry Reid not put a horse's head in his bed or something?
No, I don't, you know, it's like, it's unbelievable because once again, when the Republicans, when the Democrats want to filibuster something that's worthwhile, all of a sudden Reid has some way around it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But which is, you know, I'm just like, what? But this fool... they'll just, okay, whatever, and, you know, this nominee will just go down the rabbit hole. And Obama will, what, hurry up and point somebody else? No. It'll just stay vague.
Well, again, I go back to that decision that was made in the D.C. Circuit, Sandra, about stem cells last week. Remember, that thing's been up to the D.C. Circuit once already. And that's what yielded this latest ruling. And when it went to the D.C. Circuit, it was received by three right-wing freaks, among them Janice Rogers Brown.
Oh, please. You know what? And we knew she was a freak when that bitch was up. They didn't lift a foot.
No. They threatened to filibuster her, and that's when Bill Catkiller Frist said, well, by God, if you do, I'll go nuclear and you won't have no filibuster left, you dirty bastards.
Oh, was that the... Oh, I didn't know...
And that's when they created the Gang of 13.
But the
whole point there is that the reason that that stupid, stupid decision that allowed these right-wing evangelical groups that have no standing to sue in the first place, the reason that they got standing to sue was that it went up to the D.C. Circuit from the D.C. trial court. And it was reviewed there by three right-wing judges. And the reason it was reviewed by three right-wing judges, if you know anything about how things get done on the circuit court level, is because there are empty bench seats there that are empty because the Senate has not confirmed Obama's nominations to that bench.
Right. Okay. Because it's usually 11, right?
11 or 15. I can't remember which.
No, that's, yeah, it's incredible. But see, that goes to the same thing about how all the sort of fake Republican appointees all of a sudden turned into bureaucrats, and they're still buried deep in the various bureaucracies. And there's nothing being done by the Democratic leadership about it, which I also find suspicious. Why in the hell are you going to let your administration just be populated across the board by conservatives, which is what Obama's doing, and he doesn't seem to be making much noise about appointing anybody from what I can tell.
No, and you're going to love this. I just checked in on the chat room, and Spike's in there. He just typed, with regard to the speech, Obama pouring it on with God blessings. So I guess he was doing the God bless America thing. But the question, and another question, and this is shallow on my part, but David in Tennessee noted that he said Obama tonight has enough pancake on his face to make him ready for Mr. DeMille's close-up.
Oh, no. And so what are you extrapolating from that?
I've seen a couple of shots. You know, my dad always said that Democrat presidents get old in office, And Republican presidents just keep looking undead.
Remember Bush? He was fresh as a daisy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, meanwhile, I've seen shots of Barack Obama, and he's getting that gray around the temples thing going on.
Well, that poor man is not even 50 years old yet. So wait a minute. So the extra cake is sort of what? To hide that hollowed out he's looking?
Yeah.
You know I'm sympathetic, because I know it's a hard-ass job, but of course I always fall back on my... No one had a gun, so I jump back to, you know, my usual hating. But, you know, I don't know what to tell you. It's like Jimmy Carter and worse, because it's so timid and weak. Apparently no one could ever tell Jimmy Carter anything. Maybe Obama's like that, too.
I don't know, but I tell you what, it's just a little unsettling because again I mentioned Nancy Pelosi, you've mentioned Harry Reid. I don't want anybody to get the impression that this is all about, you know, gooning on Obama. But you know, I think, you know, it's like what I said about solving, you know, when you're surrounded by a bunch of problems, you got to solve the simple one first, and then once you've solved one, you can solve more. And I don't think they see that they can solve any of them.
I don't know what the hell they think they're doing. I mean, you know, now you got Steny Hoyer making noises about that cat food commission, you know, which is my pet hate, because I just think that is just, I don't know. I don't know what the Democrats think they're going to do. If they, because a lot of them are making noises about doing something to Social Security. They won't say what. And, of course, that scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, it does me too, because the thing is, it's solvent until 2037, and while none of us is guaranteed that, you know, even the next second, I would like to collect some of it.
Well, I was talking to my mother about it. My mother is 72, so she's right in the thick of it, right? So, I mean, she was saying, well, I'll be gone, Sandra, which is always a funny conversation, but, you know. She just shakes her head because she's really sort of quite disturbed by Obama. She voted for him, of course, but she's just really disturbed by how weak he is. That's the common chit-chat out of my family.
Well, Sandra, you know, I sort of shuffle around the house in my little flip-flops and stuff and think things. I'm a bear of very small brain. And I wondered, and I don't know what brought it into my head. Is it possible that there's a strategy inside the White House that says, hey, listen, I don't care what everybody else says, and I know my approval numbers suck, but you know what? Come 2012, all of Black America is going to bring me back in for re-election, so just don't sweat it. It's going to be okay. I got this. Is that what it is?
I have no idea. I mean, that could be one... possible thinking. Also, it could just be they are just really misreading things. I mean, anybody who would attack their base like they've been doing, I just got to shake my head and think, what in the world? You know, who knows? And you know, I don't know, because
I mean, are those numbers strong enough to get it done? You know, that because listen, A, there's not going to be a challenger on the Democratic side.
I know that's not happening.
And B, I think it was that McLaughlin Group thing that I saw on Sunday, and it just had this little stream of you know, the pasty-faced, doughy white men and women who were going to be the loyal, who were going to be the, you know, one of them was going to be the nominee in 2012. Interestingly enough, one of those photographs was Jeb Bush.
Well, see, you know how we were talking about yesterday how, well, whatever you might think of a Democrat, if you turn to look at the other side, you're like, yikes.
Oh, yeah, you get the cold sweats and your knees get weak, and yeah.
And it's not just us. I just mean in general. I don't think that the Republicans are going to ride on some wave of what?
I mean, is there anybody out there, Sandra, who thinks that Sarah Palin's going to be the nominee?
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know, this is a woman who, it turns out, remember how much fun we had when Dick Cheney's personal appearance requirements were discovered, about how he had to have, you know, when he walked into the hotel room, the TV had to be on Fox.
And 7-Up and all this sort of weird.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, she's weird, too, because her, Mussolini's requirements have been discovered. And
wow.
this is not a parody.
Oh, please.
Her lectern, and this, you know, it kind of reminds me, You remember the Knights of Nee from Monty Python?
No, I missed that one.
Oh, and you must bring back the shrubbery and plant it here next to the other shrubbery, only not the same height, with a little that created a two-level effect, with a little path running through the middle and all the other a path. Well, it turns out that Sarah Palin has to have, oh, where is it? This is precious. Lighting. Lighting should be comfortable, but at an appropriate production level for the speaker. And lecterns should be made of wood, no plexiglass or thin lecterns. But that's not the best of it. She has to have two bottles of water at the lectern, and inside the water bottles must be a bendable straw. Because I guess she's so goddamn dumb, she might put her eye out with a straight one.
That's up there with Barbara Streisand and her petals in the toilet.
Yep.
God damn. Well, I'm not surprised, but I just have a hard time imagining that.
Well, it's not going to be her, and she's not going to get the vice presidential nod either.
Oh, no.
The horror is that Jeb Bush is going to come on the scene and he's going to start talking about how we have to get serious and talk sensibly about Social Security.
A part of me just can't imagine that Republicans could be put back. See, that's why I'm saying I'm not too sure about the black folks, because there is some serious criticism going on, at least on the left wing of, you know, the sort of black community. It's some very unhappy constituents, you know, believe it or not, because he's not dealing with the biggest concern in the black community is the non-ending incarceration.
Yeah, which is conveniently not talked about.
It's never talked about, and the sort of destruction of the middle class of housing, wealth. I mean, the black community is about as bad as it's been since 1970, actually. So I don't know about that, you know. I don't know, because, my mother, you know, I'm sure she's not going to vote Republican, so it'll be a hold-your-nose moment. But,
right.
See, that's not necessarily a good situation for him, because the fact that he's black is going to take, you know, you already have a guarantee of who's not going to vote for him. So I think he could be in trouble, but who's going to be president then, Bob?
That's what I don't know.
You're stuck on this Jeb Bush resurgent, huh? God.
I'm convinced. Who else is there? Now, see, if you want to go back to Whitestock for a minute, I think in addition to what Angelo said about it being a book launch thing, which is I hadn't considered and is very, very real. But the fact of the matter is, the beneficiary is Willard Romney. It'll take a little while for us to find out, but if Glenn Beck starts making pretty noises about Willard Romney, we'll know.
No, but that acid stripper, listen, have you forgotten that hideous speech he made when he was trying to talk
about his religion?
Mormonism? Oh, come on. You think, I'm sorry, I don't know. I don't know what he brings to the table. What about that horrible, what's it, Pawlenty?
He's, I don't see it for him. I just don't. And every time I think of Willard Romney, I think about that poor terrified dog shitting himself and strapped to the top of the car when they went to Canada on vacation.
Right, that's right. I know. So I, you know, I have no idea. Maybe it'll be some dark horse that we are not thinking of right now.
No, it's Jeb. It's Jeb. It is Jeb.
You got a horror story going on in your head, Bob. That's terrible.
It cold sweats at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it can only be cured with NyQuil.
And then who's going to be his vice president?
Mike Huckabee.
Okay, the passport, I got to renew that.
Yeah, check.
Yeah, I better go buy some gold.
And don't let your dog anywhere near Huckabee's kids.
Oh, God. No, not Huckabee. God, that's... wow. Okay.
Well, or maybe, or you know what? It could be Bush Romney.
Because, see, I'm still thinking about Petraeus, but I think he wants to be top of the ticket.
Bush Petraeus could work.
Yeah, I guess. But I think
because, see, I guarantee you, Sandra, and granted, it's speculative, but it is so speculative, it is so drawn from actual fact as to take it past the realm of mere speculation. If you think about the family dynamic up at Kenny Bunkport,
yeah.
W is still giving little Jebby noogies.
I was president, and you're not. Loser. Yeah, come on outside. I'll beat your ass in badminton, too.
God, you know, when that should really be locked up, it's amazing.
But that's how that family is.
No, I just can't.
Jeb, you're not president yet, and it's making my beautiful mind hurt.
Okay, so... let's assume, though, that you know, some catalyzing event is going to precede what you're talking about, for sure, though, right? I don't mean a terrorist attack. It could be like another bank meltdown, say. But don't you think something has to happen big for that reality to happen?
For them to nominate? No.
you think the playing field is all...
Jeb has been laying in the weeds.
I don't know about that one, Bob. I really
come on. He's got a wife who speaks Spanish.
Yeah, but see, I think the Republicans have like screwed over the Latinos quite a bit. I don't know if there's any coming back.
They're going to bring it all back.
Why? By putting that horrible kid of his who climbed out of people's windows?
Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, they got him through law school or something at Texas, didn't they?
Oh, so he, because I remember when they showed his face, and then all of a sudden the kid...
Oh, my favorite of that whole thing, Sandra, was the cutback to, and I mean long ago, when she's always looked hateful and evil, but Barbara was a little bit younger, and she pointed to Jenna and Barbara, the twins, and these are my son, and this was in an interview at the Republican National Convention. And this is my son George and his wife Laura, and those are their children, Jenna and Barbara. Aren't they lovely? And this is my son Jeb and his wife, and we call those down there the little brown ones.
Oh, where was Alex or Crowley? Was he anywhere near? No, I'm joking. You know, she's evil. Yuck.
But she did. I mean, you know, you could not pay me to swap bodies with a member of the Bush family at Kenny Bunkport.
Oh, she's horrible anyway. I mean, that's...
You know, poor Laura's over in the corner taking an IV margarita with her Vicodins.
Trying to avoid...
And Babs, and Babs is reigning supreme with clutches in one hand and a martini that ain't nothing but gin in the other.
Oh, God, don't get me started thinking about the Bushes. They are so effed up.
Yeah, and let's not forget Noelle Bush.
Is that somebody who was on coke?
Yeah, that's the daughter who was on coke.
Oh, right. Who is she? Is she Neil's daughter?
No, Jeb's.
Oh, Jeb's, that's right, because that poor bitch was, like, on crack. That's right.
Yeah.
And the son, some sort of predator.
Yeah, they called him P.
Oh, my God. Right.
And he did donuts on somebody's lawn and only dodged it being a felony because, well, you know, he was the governor's son.
Yeah, no. Please. I just want to say, you know, the state of things, you know, okay, I'll leave that with you, Bob. That's too hellish for me to...
I'm telling you. Get your $20 bill. Just go to the off-track betting parlor. There you go.
Ladbrokes. Maybe I have a friend in England put a early bet on.
Yeah, whatever odds they're offering on Jeb, take it.
Oh, God. Okay, well, listen.
It'll be the best $20 you've spent. I just want a cut. That's all.
Yeah, because, God, that's probably, the odds are probably real good on that. I should look that up. You can bet on anything at Ladbrokes. So, anyway. Okay, I'll let you go. Thanks for that.
All right. See you, Sandra. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And by the way, John Fox, who has done a ton of work, setting up houses and setting up public speaking engagements and things like that, tells me not to make too much out of Mussolini and her her bendable straws. Because you know what? It's easy. Because she's so goddamn dumb, you can imagine her having a bendable straw because she's afraid, you know, her handlers are afraid she might poke her eye out. But or you know, break the lenses and then there's the cuts. No. It turns out that's a standard speaking engagement request for female speakers. And it has, and you know, not being a frequent user of lipstick, I wouldn't know, but I'm told it has something to do with not mussing the lipstick. That if it's bendable and you can get it up to, yeah, okay, that makes sense. It's at a position that's parallel to the mouth, and so you don't have to ruin the, okay, I got that. So if you catch somebody, the damn dummy's got to have a bendable straw. No, it's not. It's not quite like Barbara Streisand with the rose petals in the toilet. No. And you know what? There actually was a reason that Van Halen had the brown M&Ms taken out of the M&M bowl. It had to do with workplace safety. It made sense. But you know what? There's not a thousand words, 500 words, or 2 words, or 2 million that could come out of the mouth of Caribou Barbie that would be worth at least $75,000 is the minimum. If she's flying around the west coast of the U.S., she has to have at least a Learjet 60. Or a Hawker 800 private plane for continent-wide flight. No kidding. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Matt, what's up?
There's got a whole lot going on in the world tonight, as always. We're talking to Sandra a minute ago, and I had to call in when I heard this because you were talking about what is the plan for 2012, and I know what the plan for 2012 is. I do. I absolutely do.
Well, whip out the magic eight ball and pull up your wizard sleeves and share.
Well, first of all, let's remind ourselves, Obama's not on the ballot this November.
No, he is not.
2010 is not about Obama, and the sooner we get that through our thick, progressive, liberal, left-wing conspiracy heads, the better. The better things will turn out to be for us. Now, you will remember that there was a part of the speech that Sandra was talking about that she had seen a sort of preview of. Well, what she needs to do is she needs to take the transcript of this speech and show it to an Iraq War veteran or anyone coming back from Afghanistan. What we don't understand is that during White Stock, okay, DFA had 200,000 volunteers knocking on doors in critical districts. All right? Remember I talk about being the first dimension of 11-dimensional chess? You remember how sometimes
sure.
I'm impatient with the left, even though I am progressive in the very pit of my soul, I'm also very impatient, and not with the president, but with my fellow lefties, okay? It's herding cats. You've said that yourself, okay? It's herding cats. Well, here are all these soldiers, and mind you, the president is wildly popular with these soldiers. They're going to come back.
Now, wait. You just said, did I understand you correctly? You said the president is wildly popular with the soldiers, this president,
yes.
Obama?
Yes, he is wildly popular with our soldiers.
But hasn't the right wing, no, they hate him.
This is exactly why you have hit the very crucial point that I'm going to make, which is that by 2012, these kids are going to be coming home from Afghanistan, and they will have come home from Iraq. And they will have some things to say. Now you know the secret plan. You don't get them to do that by dissing their mission. You don't get them to do that by dwelling on civilian casualties. Even though I have dwelt on civilian casualties in the past, I understand why the president's not talking about it.
Yeah, there's a whole, a million is a whole lot of dead people.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we really did a bang-up job, didn't we?
Killing civilians.
Totally. Just totally a bang-up job of killing civilians. I know.
And now, don't think for a minute that it doesn't just give me a case of the shiver and dribbles. to think that those self-same predator drones that we have done such a bang-up job on, like wedding parties in Afghanistan, are going to be flying the entire length of the U.S.-Mexican border.
Oh, and Yemen.
Sure.
Yeah, that was in the news last week. They're going to be flying our UAVs over Yemen. Yeah, I know. And we can talk about all this. And as a matter of fact, I think I understand my role, Bob. I think my role is to be the devil's advocate and speak from the center. But I have something I want to share with your listeners.
But I'm already in the center.
You may or may not be aware of this. This is what I want to share with them, okay?
Okay.
Okay. You've probably heard of the Maine Tea Party.
Oh, yeah. The guys that put out the map.
Right. The Maine Tea Party. David Weigel, who's a great writer, pointed out three things in their platform, okay? One was the return to the principles of Austrian economics, which is code all monetary policy.
Right, and they've got that creepy institute down at Auburn.
Right, and...
Von Mises.
What is it that they want to restore? The gold standard, right?
That's part of it, yes.
Gold line, gold standard. You see, there's a demographic here.
And so if we go back to the gold standard, that automatically inures to the benefit of the idiots who have bought gold?
Well, actually it does, because it drives up the price of gold. If you go to a gold standard, it does drive up the price of gold. The problem is that you don't have enough gold in the world today
to back up all the currency.
No, you do not have that.
And let's say you did have it, Matt. What happens if we go to a gold standard and China says we're calling the note?
Exactly. If we go to a gold standard and they decide to call in all those treasury bills that they bought, it's ludicrous. Part two, even better. Discard political correctness. Make public the declaration of war, jihad, gets in parentheses, made against the U.S. on 23 February 1998, and fight the war against the United States by radical Islam to win. In other words, declare holy war.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, point three. Defeat cap and trade. Investigate collusion between government and industry in the global warming myth, and prosecute...
Oh, don't forget not letting global warming theory be taught in our public schools.
And criminalizing science in the process. Now, mind you, this should be resonating with you when we talk about these issues, okay, and we talk about how the right regards them. We're not projecting this kind of thinking on them. This is from their own mouth. And we know that their worldview is basically a projection of their authoritarian mindset. And have you read Bob Altmaier's book about authoritarians?
Yes.
Okay, you've read it. So I just want to just go to this relevant passage right here. And then I'll finish my point and I'll get off your air.
No hurry.
He had an experiment, Bob Altmaier did, where he had this global change game, which is basically sort of a model UN type thing.
Right.
And in this game, you have armies that you can buy. You have different ways of making money for your nation, and you also get to do diplomacy with other nations. And what happened when he took people who tested out as right-wing authoritarian personality, when he took nothing but right-wing authoritarians and put them in a room together and played this game?
They blew up the world.
This is what happened. First, they blew up the world, a nuclear holocaust that killed everybody on Earth. Okay? And when this happens in the global change game, now I'm reading, the facilitators turn out all the lights and explain what a nuclear war would produce. Then the players are given a second chance to determine the future, turning back the clock to 2 years before the hounds of war were loose. This time, the former Soviet Union rebuilt its armies and invaded China, killing 400 million people. The Middle East elite then called for a United Nations meeting to discuss handling future crises, but no agreements were reached.
Nobody came to the meeting.
At this point, the ozone layer crisis occurred, but perhaps because of the recent failure of the UN meeting, no one called for a summit. Only Europe took steps to reduce its harmful gas emissions, so the crisis got worse. Poverty was spreading unchecked in the underdeveloped regions, which could not control their population growth. instead of dealing with the social and economic problems back home, elites began jockeying among themselves for power and protection, forming military alliances to confront other budding alliances. Threats raced around the room, and the Confederation of Independent States warned it was ready to start another nuclear war. Partly because their elites had used their meager resources to buy into alliances, Africa and Asia were on the point of collapse. An elite called for a UN meeting to deal with the crisis, and nobody came. By the time 40 years had passed, the world was divided into armed camps threatening each other with another nuclear destruction. 1,700,000 people had died of starvation and disease. Throw in the 400 million who died in the Soviet-China War, and casualties reached 2.1 billion. Throw in the 7.4 billion who died in the nuclear holocaust, and the high right-wing authoritarians managed to kill 9.5 billion people in their world. The authoritarian world ended in disaster for many reasons. One was likely the character of their elites, who put more than twice as much money in their own pockets as the low RWA elites had. The Middle East elite ended up the world's richest man. Part of his wealth came from money he had conned from third world elites as payment for joining his alliance. Sounds familiar. But more importantly, the high right-wing authoritarians proved incredibly ethnocentric. There they were in a big room full of people just like themselves, and they all turned their backs on each other and paid attention only to their own group. They, too, were all reading from the same page, but writ large on their page was, care about your own. We are not all in this together. Now, Bob, I want to contrast that. The president's speaking from the center tonight, and the number one complaint I'm hearing from the left is that he's too much of a centrist. But the alternative is that. If you do not turn out for the down-ballot races, if you are not willing to vote for the Democrat over the Republican this November, this is how I feel. You are saying that these people should be in charge. You are saying that this is okay. If you do not show up to vote in November, if you do not do everything you can between now and November to defeat this monster, then you are responsible. I hold you personally responsible. That's how I feel.
Well, I'm turning out. But I'm not going to vote for my Democratic congressman. I'm not going to do it.
Okay. You're not going to vote for your
And Democratic I'm not voting for the Democratic nominee for the Senate either.
Okay.
Because you know what? It's one thing to have a man slit my throat. It's another thing to hand him the damn knife that he does it with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the truth.
Really,
that's what those two are doing.
You really think that putting a Republican in there is better?
No, I don't think it's better. I think it's the same.
You think it's the same? You think it's absolutely the same?
Let's see. In Joe Manchin's case, Joe Manchin privatized workers' compensation in West Virginia when we had a perfectly good government-run system that had only been broken by virtue of the Republican corruption. But he saw an opportunity to privatize it and make some money for his buddies out of it, so he did.
Not voting for him is the same as voting for his opponent. That's the way I feel.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to. But you know, the fact of the matter is, Matt, the man has had 8 years, or almost, he's had 6 years, to do something about the assault on my family and my neighbors and my friends, and I'm watching them get sick and die as if a war had been waged on them.
Yeah.
And he didn't do it.
Yeah.
Now, why do I have to hand him the knife to keep slashing at me?
Why?
The man believes in privatizing Social Security.
Bob, I absolutely agree. This man does not need to be in the Senate. I absolutely agree. On the other hand, is his opponent worse?
Oh, much worse.
Much worse. What makes you think that putting something worse is going to be better for you?
Because it's a question of degree, Matt. It's not like Joe Manchin is going to be able to do enough good Joe Manchin is Ben Nelson with better hair. You probably heard Sandra mentioning the fact that Ben Nelson is out there filibustering an Obama appointee. It's not Mitch McConnell. It's not John McCain. It's not Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Tood.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Democrat, Ben Nelson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ben Nelson, one of my least favorite Democrats.
Well, what's the point in sending another one?
What's the point in sending something worse? I mean, it's like saying, well, I don't want to send up Sarah Palin, so I'll send up Cthulhu.
Fair enough. But the fact
that... How is that better?
Matt, you're making an argument I'm not making. I'm not saying it's better.
What I hear from you, and it's okay to disagree. In fact, I'm glad that we could have this disagreement. I really am. But what I'm hearing from you is a sentiment that says, I am so unexcited by this candidate. Because
no, I'm not unexcited by this candidate. I am openly...
Because of the way they have acted towards my interests in the past, I am so unexcited by this candidate. And because of what they promised for the future, I'm so unexcited by this candidate that I'm not going to turn out to vote for him. I'm not going to send him any money. I'm not going to organize for him. I'm not going to knock on doors for him. And I'm not going to advocate for him. I'm not going to hold my nose and do that. And I'm going to let the worst thing happen. I know, it's a devil's choice. It's what the makers of South Park once made fun of as the choice between a douche and a shit sandwich. You can think of the Republican, I think, as the shit sandwich.
Well, let's put it this way. Let's put it this way. Of the two guys that I'm not voting for, their opponents will be freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
And relatively powerless. They can do less harm to me and mine as freshman Republicans than the one who is an entrenched Democrat can do to me. And has done to me.
You make an interesting point there. That is an interesting argument.
Matt, this isn't esoteric politics for me anymore.
See, it's not esoteric politics for me either.
There's blood involved now. There are dead people involved now.
I have a sticker on my child's biology textbook that's a warning against evolution, okay? So, yes, I'm turning out to vote because the down-ballot races are where the GOP will take over. All right? This is where they always have aimed to take over.
Right, and I've got people I'm going to vote for down-ballot. But,
good,
you know, me miss an election? No way.
See, there you go. This is what I want to hear.
I'm going to go to vote, and I'm going to vote for Jesse Johnson for Senate. And I'm either going to leave congressional election blank, and that's about the best I can do, or if there's a Mountain Party candidate, vote for him.
There you go.
I never said I wasn't going.
See, this is interesting. We actually are arguing with each other and coming to a kind of weird middle ground, and I like that. But I will get off your air because your show is almost over.
Yeah, oh my God, it is.
And you know what? Let's continue this conversation later.
Well, we certainly can. We certainly can. Because, you know, the conundrum that the Democrats have put themselves in is not one of your making or my making, Matt.
Absolutely.
They are laying on a bed of nails that they drove into the boards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, I'm going to shoot you an email. I'll talk to you later, okay?
All right. See you, Matt. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I really see it that way. I know that Joe Manchin and Nick Rahal are slitting my throat. I know that Nick Rahal has specifically done it because he has come back here and bragged to the coal industry about having stopped the legislation that would have ended this miserable practice that's poisoning my region and my nation and my family. He's bragged about it. Now, I need a cogent explanation. Not to say Matt's wasn't. But why should I sharpen the knife and hand it to him? What's he done to earn my vote? He's spit in my face. You know what? I'm not so abused and dysfunctionally a member of the Democratic Party that I'm going to that I'm going to say, hit me again, I can put a little stank on it this time. No, no. Not me. Not me. So that's the program for tonight. I apologize for all the blinking lights that remain, but you know what? Tomorrow's another night, and we will get after it, and the conversation will continue. August will close with us about $650 away from our monthly fundraising goal. I don't know what Ben's status is over at whiterosesociety.org, but I got to figure out a way to get him paid. Or not him paid, but get the White Rose Society bills paid. And I thank you for all of your support. Awfully glad we had the guest we did earlier this evening. Angelo is a sharp, sharp guy. And he's doing amazing work trying to return a little bit of civility to the political debate in this country. StopBeck.com. You can also follow him on Twitter. He is StopBeck on Twitter. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. John Fox is our chief engineer in Australia. He's also our webmaster, our web designer, and just about every other hat that needs wearing these days. I'm looking forward to tomorrow evening. I think we're going to get a much-needed update on the very, very uncertain situation that has obtained of late in the Australian government. And you may recall that Sandra mentioned something about the fact that all of this is, these hung governments are beginning to become a bit of a trend. Thanks, John. Thanks to Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org. None of these streams go out without Ben Birch and what he has done every day since 2002 with the White Rose Society. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Look for something new and exciting from and downright entertaining from Reverbo here soon at Cavalcade of Crazy, our op-ed column at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. This program happens also because of the continued generous support of the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org, as well as AppalachiaRising.org. Go to AppalachiaRising.org and see what all the noise is about what's going to be going on in Washington at the end of September, the 25th through the 27th. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
know.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is my favorite day of the week. It is Monday. Why is it my favorite day of the week? Because after 2 days of enforced silence, well, I'm ready to get back behind the microphone and get back after it, doggone it. And don't we have plenty to work with tonight? Oh, my God, the weekend was like a gift from the gods. If, that is, the gods are in charge of... Oh, I don't know. If the gods are in charge of, yeah, morons. Yes, indeedy. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get over here. Stop fiddle farting around with the cotton candy and the candy apples. You're never going to shoot out all that. Shoot that target out, that little red star with that crooked barrel BB gun. Get over here. Get over here. Come on over. Come off the midway. Come over to the main attraction tent. It's Moran Monday on the horn. We have morans in abundance. We have, in fact, 87,000 morans standing in 90-degree heat on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. on a Saturday for Beccapalooza or White Stock or... whatever you care to call it. What they were was a bunch of Beckerheads. And we've got them all for you right here on Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You can't tell the morans without this program. You will not believe your ears. You will be shocked. You will be stunned. You will be amazed. For no charge at all, you can slip behind the curtain here and see the morans. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Mothers of small children and pregnant women are advised not to come in. It is that shocking. Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Don't you love the new Moran Monday music? I love the new Moran Monday music. Our good buddy Scott in Sweden sent that along. Just to add, so I wouldn't have to improvise anyway. I'm so musically benighted. I had no idea that that was March of the Gladiators. But it is. It's March of the Gladiators. I don't know who wrote it. I'm sure Scott will tell me once he hears the podcast. Thank you, Scott, for sending that along. That helps out immensely. But then again, I didn't know, I just thought that was circus music, or carnival music. Whatever it is, I think it was played on a calliope. Thank you, Anderson Cooper. God. But then again, I think we're to be forgiven. Because to the same extent that I, Moran that I am, didn't know that that was the March of the Gladiators, I'm pretty damn sure that the folks attending Beccapalooza, White Stock, whatever, didn't know that this was by Aaron Copland. Because it was played again and again. Well, it was played with some frequency. Yeah, that. At the beckoning. There can be only one. Listen to that, Marvelline. Glenn Beck's playing that Beef It's What's For Dinner music. That, of course, is Aaron Copland's Rodeo. In particular, I do believe it is hoedown. Emerson, Lake, and Palmer did a whale of a job on this, too. When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue. Yeah, no, they didn't know that was Aaron Copland. And to the same extent, when they were introducing their everyday heroes or whatnot, well, they didn't know this was Aaron Copland either, but I sure hope Aaron Copland's lawyers were paying attention. And you know what? Beck is such a miserable cheapskate, he couldn't even hire an orchestra to play this. Are there no right-wing orchestras? No, there aren't. Not unless you want them to all be on banjo and jew's harp. Jug band, washboard. What's the difference between a banjo and an onion? As Lee reminded us.